Okay, in that case, we'll now begin. So item 6.2... indeed. I should indeed. So there's some legalese I need to resolve. First of all, I just need to confirm with Councillor Soames that you are a voting member and there are no issues of dispensation that we should take note.
That's correct, James.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much. If I now move on to item 6.2, application 18AP 1215, full application 160 Blackfriars Road and land to the rear of London SE18EZ. Who will present?
Thanks, Chair, I will. This is an application for a site at the rear of an existing nine-storey office block on Blackfriars Road. It's currently used as car parking for the offices on the road frontage and has around 70 car parking spaces on the open yard. The removal of this car parking and the congestion and pollution which would arise from this level of car use in a very central area would be supported by policy at both Southwark and London plan levels and particularly helpful on the cycle superhighway that goes up Blackfriars Road. Around its boundaries are Blackfriars Primary School, a student housing block, and the rear of the Foundry and Priory buildings on Webber Street. The site is within an opportunity area within the CAZ and town centre and has excellent access to public transport. So it is an area where policy would support new hotels, which are an important part of London's tourist and business economies. Southwark is now a major tourist destination, and it's reasonable to assume that hotels would form part of that tourist infrastructure. A recent GLA study that supports the emerging New London plan found that Southwark has just 4% of London's hotel bed spaces, which placed it seventh on the list of London boroughs in terms of its contribution to hotel beds. A number of objections have been... So I'll just show you the plan. So this is the site outlined in red with the office building with its kind of core at the back shown on the street frontage and the existing ground floor of the office. A number of objections have been received raising concerns about the number of hotels, particularly in the Bankside area. Southwark's policy does require a judgment to be made as to whether there is an over-concentration of hotels in an area which can affect the character and drive out other valuable and legitimate uses. The report concludes that whilst the number of hotels has grown significantly since around the millennium, there is still a diverse range of uses in the area. In the absence of any definition as to how over-concentration would be measured, the council would need to present clear evidence of harm being caused by hotel development if it was to justify resisting further hotels. In the absence of clear evidence that hotels have harmed character or amenity, and given the strong support for hotels in the London plan, we're recommending that the principle of a new hotel here is acceptable. I'm just going through this on the floor plans. The new hotel would stand at the rear of the office block, and a new route would be broken through the base of the office to provide access to the hotel, and also to some small retail and office units centred around a small public courtyard. And this intervention in the office facade, which is what you can see on the screen, and some related improvements to the shopfront and ramps are positive and bring some additional life to the street elevation. And there we're seeing the route going through to some open areas which serve or provide outdoor seating for use of the hotel and also the retail uses. The hotel would have 220 rooms in a 10-storey building with a more extensive ground floor, which is what you're seeing there. Shrink it down again. Hotel ground floor, hotel entrance. And then this is the first floor, which stacks then of hotel bedrooms. As I say, 220 rooms. A number of objections have been received relating to the scale, but the height was supported by the GLA, and images show that the building would not be overbearing in local views. And what you're seeing at the rear in the sort of grey, sort of slightly striped effect is the southern end of the hotel building, and that lighter treatment of the architecture on the top three floors helps to make it sit comfortably in its context. And the number of design features do break up the what can be quite repetitive facades in the hotel because of the cellular room structures. And we have some images, I think, later on about some of the way window reveals are treated to avoid a monolithic appearance. Around its boundaries are Friars School on the sort of north east or east side, a student housing block, which is the Manor Ash House on that slide, and the Foundry and Priory buildings on Webber Street. And we have received a number of objections relating to the daylight and sunlight impacts, and they're assessed on pages 86 to 88 of the report. And this concludes that while there are impacts, they're relatively modest in most cases and restricted to a small number of buildings, most notably Globeview House, the student housing block, and Tadworth House. The school was also tested, although it's clearly not residential, and the impacts relate more to overshadowing of outdoor areas rather than classrooms, and the impacts tend to fall in the later part of the day. It's noted that the school has been consulted by the applicants during their pre-application application stages. We've obviously consulted them as well through the formal process, and they did not object to the council, although this clearly should not be taken as support, merely that we have not received a formal objection from them. The application also includes a roof terrace for the office, which is what you see on the bottom half of that picture. Note this is limited to the office workers only and not for the hotel, and it's controlled by condition 6 on the draft decision notice in terms of its use, which also requires the terrace to be closed by 10 p.m. each evening. In terms of transport impacts, both the retained office and the new hotel can be serviced within the rear service yard and basement. And following queries raised by members, a plan has been produced, and it's included in the addendum and also on the screen here, showing the locations of the nearest servicing bays and coach bays, including larger loading bays which are capable of accommodating coaches. This shows that there are sufficient options in the vicinity to ensure that coaches and taxis can safely and conveniently serve the hotel, and that there would be no harmful impact on the cycle superhighway. And my colleague Alex can answer more questions on that if you have them. I briefly mentioned that the site is allocated in the emerging use of the plan, which and the allocation requires full replacement of offices in any development or 50% of the new total floor space. The allocation basically assumed redevelopment of the whole site rather than the partial development in the rear yard, which we have here. However, the proposal would comply in that the offices are being retained in full and slightly increased through the new unit on the rear, and offices would remain the majority use on the site. So I'll draw your attention to the addendum, which lists a couple of additional objections that have come in since the report was produced. And also, I'm afraid there was an admin error in the publication of the original report, which seemed to have cut off the second half of the conclusion, or I would say it's probably three quarters of the conclusion. So those paragraphs are in your addendum report so that you have the full conclusion of officers on the scheme. So in my conclusion, and I just have some more images of the scheme, which I'll just quickly flick through. So you see that we have one treatment on the lower part of the hotel building and the lighter treatment on the top three floors, which is repeated on all faces of the building. The section shows you the relative height of the new hotel in relation to the frontage office building and in larger section. And this shows the rejuvenated Blackfriars Road frontage with the feature marking the new entrance and the terrace structure on the top. So in my conclusion, whilst a large number of objections have been received to the principle of a hotel here, the location is one where hotels would be strongly supported in policy, and the immediate surrounding area still comprises a mix of offices, workspaces, homes, shops and education. And perhaps to note that the sites immediately to the north on Pocock Street and to the west on Valentine Place have been recently developed for offices and homes. So there is still a vibrant mix of land uses coming forward in the immediate area. The amenity and transport impacts have been raised in objections, but the level of impact would not warrant refusal. The Section 106 terms are set out on pages 96 and 97 of the agenda and are noted, and on that basis, and subject to the referral to the Mayor for London and completion of the legal agreement, we're recommending that planning permission be granted. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. This time I'll point to again my extreme left, Captain Mayhash.
Thank you. So I want to ask a question about the density of hotels in the area. So you said we don't have a measure for determining whether it increases a certain number or anything. You said that we'd need to be looking at the harm created by these hotels. I'm just wondering how we would measure that, both in terms of what the actual kind of criteria we measure against are, then also how would you reconcile the fact that when we pass planning permission, that is often some years before the thing is actually built, before you actually see the impact of such harms if they are to exist. So are we confident that whatever measurement we have for these harms has not already been exceeded by what we've already passed in planning permission, even if it hasn't already been built?
The policy doesn't define over-concentration, so we'd have to take a view on harm, and I think that could take a couple of forms. One would be that the hotels have driven out other legitimate land uses which would have value in the area, so whether that was employment space, homes, education spaces, cultural spaces, that would be one aspect. Another aspect would be whether their external impacts on things like transport were so significant that they had become too dominant in the area. And the third would be around amenities, or whether they were recognisable amenity impacts from people using the hotels, whether that pattern of usage was sufficiently harmful to people's lives to warrant refusing any further hotels. Because we haven't really got a measure for that, we would have to take a view on what was reasonable to expect in this kind of area, where, as I say, policy gives very strong support at regional and local level to hotels and the benefits they have to the tourist economy and to the wider London economy. The new study produced as part of the Emerging London Plan is very clear that central London areas that have a major role in tourism, like we do, we have some of world-leading institutions in Southwark, that it's legitimate to expect hotels to want to be in those areas. I haven't seen anything which would point to harm coming out, and I recognise that, or we recognise that, we have a large number of hotels and they tend to be in a relatively confined area around London Bridge and Bankside. But, from our analysis of what's coming forward in the area, and I think at one point we should perhaps do a count of the hotel bed spaces that come forward aligned with the number of other uses that have come forward in recent large planning applications, new homes, new office space, and look at the sort of balance of those things. But in my view, and I'm giving this as an opinion without a measure in the plan against which to judge it, is that Bankside remains very vibrant with a very healthy mix of uses in there.
So just as a kind of comment to respond, I understand everything that you just said, and I see we're in a situation where we're not able to measure this effectively, but my only worry is that the point at which we'll realise that this or another planning application regarding hotels in an area with high concentration of hotels is harmful is only the point at which that application has been passed and built. And I think that's something maybe to consider in general.
If I may, I think that's a fair comment. We tend to look at these applications in isolation. It is highly likely, therefore, that future applications will be set within that context of the prior applications and the impact it's had on the immediate communities. And I'm sure Ward Council and others will make comments to that effect at some future point. But I do think it's right for us to think about the impact of the concentration for hotels in a relatively small geographic area. I think that's a perfectly reasonable observation to make and one for us to take away at another time. If you don't mind, McCullum, if I can take, go ahead, yes.
We went to visit yesterday and just seeing how close the school was. Is there any protection as far as distance goes to the school? And also the student accommodation was right on the wall there. Which, you know, all this 21 metres is no such thing for those sort of buildings.
A 21 metre distance is set out in the residential design standards, so it's got to be led by residential development because it's a kind of a guide for what is good practice in mainly in designing residential, but we also use it to assess impact on existing housing. Here we don't have housing on either the new building or the affected building. So to apply the 21 metre distance, if challenged, would be more difficult.
The student accommodation isn't residential then?
Student accommodation is a kind of residential, but it's not mainstream residential. We class it as what's called a sui generis use, so a use that sits outside of the use class order, whereas residential is called class C3, so we're quite clear that when we use the term residential, generally, we're not referring to student housing, which we treat slightly differently. Notwithstanding people live there, but we treat it slightly differently. And that's the use class order defines that.
Adam McCann.
Thank you, Chair. I'm afraid I'm going to go back to the question of that principle of hotel development in the area. Can I just confirm, firstly, though, that the policy you were referring to just now, Yvonne, was SAVED policy 1.12 of the Southwark plan? I thought so. I'm concerned slightly by the way that this has been described, both this evening and previously by officers. I've got the policy in front of me. If I can just read it to you. It says, hotels and visitor accommodation will not be permitted where they would result in a loss of existing residential accommodation, which doesn't apply, or an overdominance of visitor accommodation in the locality. Full stop. That's the end of the sentence. So, I mean, setting aside the difference between over-dominance and over-concentration. I fear that we've been talking about this already this evening in the context of considering whether or not and to what extent that over-dominance harms the area or affects the character of the area. Actually, that's not in the policy. The policy is simply whether or not there is an over-dominance of the provision of hotel accommodation. I kind of want to give you the opportunity to, I suppose, either clarify or confirm my understanding and interpretation of the policy.
Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you.
I'm just getting someone to look it up for me, but as I recall, the last clause on that policy does talk about amenity impacts.
And also strategic policy terms, of course.
Yeah. And the Terms just reminding, the strategic policy 10 of the core strategy has a similar sort of vein to it. I think with any planning application, if you were to resist it and want to refuse it, we have to point to the harm caused. So
sure.
That is sort of at the core of the planning system. So I think that's where our interpretation of overdominance, overconcentration, it wouldn't be enough to simply say there is an overconcentration. We would have to say, and that goes on to cause a certain amount of harm to an interest of acknowledged importance. So, you know, we need to look at both sort of legs of it, really.
I understand what you're saying, but to my reading of the policy, it's almost inherent within that policy, the starting point that an overdominance would be harmful. In that there's no contingent factor on that overdominance or on that quantum of supply. The policy simply states that an overdominance would not be allowed. So although I agree that it's important for us to be able to justify the harm caused by an application, I'm saying that the policy itself seems to imply that harm would be caused simply by the nature of overdominance.
I don't know whether you want to have this debate.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
I appreciate it's maybe a bit later. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify the policy.
No, I understand your. I do understand your point. I think what we would say is to say something has become overdominant, you would have to define what overdominance means and why it's a problem. Because simply to say it's overdominant, we'd have to put some parameters around that, which would have to be about the impact of that overdominance. Because the word on its own isn't going to be sufficient, particularly when you look at the extent of support for hotels in the London plan, a more up-to-date document. We would have to be very clear why we had reached a sort of tipping point in this area in terms of being able to sustain hotels. So overdominance would have to be defined by the harm caused by the overdominance, rather, because we haven't got a numeric measure for it. So it would have to be something which defined why it was overdominant or how it had become overdominant.
Thank you. Thank you. And maybe that was partially my fault. But certainly it is an issue for consideration, maybe not tonight, but most certainly in the future, an overview of past planned decisions and their impact upon the community. I've mentioned the ward councillors and others will, I'm sure, provide the necessary evidence we need to pursue that particular issue, that particular question, at a future time. If I can take Councillor Morris, then Councillor Jason.
Thank you, Chair. So this particular site isn't mentioned at all in the Blackfriars Road supplementary planning document that was issued in January 2014. It's not on the list. And indeed, in 2014, it had only just been refurbished, those offices. And in the new Southwark plan, which admittedly has not yet gone to the inspector, but the description of Friars House, 157 to 168 Blackfriars Road, it is Friars House, isn't it? We're talking, yes. It says, redevelopment of this site must reprovide at least the amount of employment floor space currently on the site, da-da-da, provide active frontages, and redevelopment of the shut site should provide new homes. It doesn't mention a hotel. So why, in the response in the addendum to the objection, does it say this particular site has been identified as being a location that is well suited for hotels? There's no mention of hotel in the emerging Southwark plan. So who is in charge and in control of how our sites are being developed? Is it us or is it the developers?
Thank you, Councillor Morris. It's interesting. I'm going to, if I may, I'm not going to ask for an immediate response to that question, but of course the Office of Report is based upon both the evidence, our policies, and I'm sure officers will refer to relevant policy shortly, okay? And of course, to this issue of whether or not this area has been subject to overdominance of hotels. Now, I've seen the document, I've also read it as well, but I've a different interpretation of what you've just described. I'm loath to go back and forth on this one for the moment, but I do believe at least partial response might be given to Councillor Morris, if possible, if we could at least provide some contextualised response. Because clearly, Councillor Morris has alluded to the fact that the current plan talks about homes and not hotels, and that's interesting, I must say, in an area such as that. I don't know why that is so, and I'm not sure if anyone else can tell me why that might be so. Can anyone tell us why that might be so? In reference to hotels. Yeah,
right.
You want
a site allocation in the emerging plan that hasn't been adopted is a guideline for the redevelopment of a site if it were to come forward for redevelopment. I think the issue here is that we have a use that has come forward because there is an opportunity to extend an existing commercial use into its backland. That is not a redevelopment of the whole site. So a redevelopment of the whole site should take that opportunity to bring in a mix of uses, including residential. What we've taken a view on here is that the guidelines for redevelopment of the whole site have not come forward. You've got most of the site being retained in its existing use and a further commercial use being introduced that is compatible with it.
Now, again, I want to be really careful here, but of course, this type of discussion, one would have hoped, would have started prior to this meeting, and therefore we're not going to conclude the discussion at this meeting. It's a question of the policies and interpretation of policies, which, of course, is what the officers have provided to us tonight. I don't see a conclusion coming out of this of our dialogue tonight, unless you're going to use it as the basis to determine whether or not you support the application or not. But if I may, I prefer if we have that discussion after we've heard the presentations. So unless I've misinterpreted what you've said, I want to move on and we can return to it later. Councillor Jason.
Thank you for your representation, officers. I have a question on point 2022, paragraph 22 in the amended document. It says the data used to project hotel trip generation is almost 10 years old and did not take Uber into account. That's one of the objections, but the response then says the forecast vehicular movements were calculated from bona fide and recent travel surveys of comparable sites from the nationally recognised tricks. So, I have two questions. My first question is, can you talk me through the methodology used by tricks, and then I'll follow up with a question.
what tricks does is, they carry out travel surveys of sites all over the country. Even in London, most sites, based on various use classes. And what we tend to do is, if an application comes in, we interrogate this software and collect a specific, select relevant sites, like the sites we use for the for this 160 Blackfriars Road. They are sites that are located in an area of high public, excellent public transport accessibility level, and the. Most of the travel surveys are very recent because TRIX, they review the data from time to time. They carry, even they will consult local authorities to say if we have a specific site we want them to look at, they will go and survey the site. So most of the data tend to be very, very recent.
Okay. Thank you. To satisfy my insatiable curiosity, I call TRIX to find out the methodology they use. They talked me through the methodology, asked a range of questions, of course. The question that I asked is, how do you observe when an Uber driver comes past toe and throat at peak hours? And they said to me that they observe it using a sticker on an Uber car. But you and I know that most Uber drivers don't put an Uber sticker on the car. Most Uber drivers use their own cars. Yes, they may have the recognized authoritative plate, which is normally stuck inside of their car, which is quite difficult to see. So therefore, the only way they're able to observe Uber drivers is if they have a sticker. You and I also know that the use of Uber in that area, in London, is quite widely used. So given the fact that they're only able to observe when an Uber driver drops off a passenger is if they have a sticker, I find it quite hard to see how point 156 in the paper, page 104, stands, because it says that TRIX travel database, it says the council's transport team have reviewed the application against comparable sites travel surveys with the TRIX travel database and consider that the development would generate 24 and 19 additional two-way vehicle movements in the morning and evening peak hours, respectively. So, given that the TRIX survey isn't able to really accurately observe when Uber drivers come in and out, how bona fide do you think that this is in observing traffic? Because this traffic is a material consideration for us to consider this evening.
What we've got to understand is tricks calculate the in and out of all vehicles coming to the site in any event, and the predicted traffic involves all the cars, so including taxis, Uber, and the sites we've used actually, one was 2014, which precedes Uber period, because Uber is only very recent, and a couple of them I said 2010, all these precede Uber time anyway. So all these sites are bona fide. They exclude the Uber period, if I might explain it that way. Another thing as well is if we look at the profile of the taxi, within Etrix, it actually breaks it down by number of taxis, profile of taxi arrival and departure. And when you look at it overall for the whole day, it's only 49. And when you distribute it for the whole day, the number of taxis in and out vehicle movement, which means if it's 49, you're talking about 25 taxis because it's in and out calculation there. So the surveys we've used precede Uber time, and they are bona fide survey, and in fact, the overall vehicular traffic includes taxis. So really, we cannot say taxi element of it is significant.
Thank you. Thank you, and that's an interesting dialogue, which we're sure the applicants most probably will have a sort of traffic expert handy. I'm sure we'll get to that later on. Can I take other members' contributions, first of all? Councillor
Soane,
yes.
Yes, Chair, I'm a little bit sort of confused and perplexed at the sunlight, daylight analysis in terms of choirs, primary schools. So it states in paragraph 77 that there's been, there's more than a 20% BSC affecting six windows. But then it goes on to state in, so I'm just wondering, is this a contradiction? In 78, the sunlight assessment demonstrates that all rooms will continue to receive BRA compliant sunlight, and this is positive. So if an explanation around that sort of a seemingly on paper contradiction. And then what my supplementary, my second question is, the overshadowing. Now, as has already been stated, we did go on a visit last evening, and there were three windows clear that were not obstructed by the canopy. So I'd like to know, what is the difference in terms of terminology over overshadowing and distinct loss of sunlight, daylight? And what would be the impact, because on the overshadowing of the three windows that were clear windows that were unobstructed, and that would have a direct impact, or the light would have a direct impact, but the building would have a direct impact on those windows.
Thank you, councillors. Very long questions, of course. I hope
the
essence have been captured by whoever's going to respond. There we go. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The applicant has brought their daylight and sunlight specialist with them. They might be more appropriate to answer the second part of your question around the unobstructed windows. But in terms of the first part of the question, there are six windows that would have more than a 20% reduction in VSC. VSC is related to daylight. So there are six windows that would have more than a 20% reduction, like you pointed out. But they serve rooms that have multiple windows, and the other windows in those rooms are unaffected. So when you look at the room and the windows as a whole, you can come to the conclusion that the daylight isn't adversely impacted, because only one of multiple windows that serve the room would have the 20% reduction.
I'm not going to interrupt, but I want to get some parameters in terms of the toing and froing. I'm happy for at least one or two back and forth, as long as the responses and further questions add to the sum of the issue, rather than simply repeating the issue. So if your response is to clarify or add to what's been said, I'd be happy to take it.
Well, you've been interrupted. He hasn't responded
to his statements. No, I think he said that the applicant may well. Anyway, go ahead.
Sorry, I might have been confused as well. The daylight and sunlight are different assessments. One assesses the availability of a window to... The potential for a window to get a view of the sky. And the sunlight assessment is a separate one, but like I said previously, the specialist is here, and they might be better at answering that question.
And then the term overshadowing, as opposed to a comment on sunlight, daylight and vertical sky component, should I reserve that for the sunlight, daylight, or are you able to sort of provide a distinction?
Perhaps you just say to me, paragraph.
Because a shadow is a shadow and it's a block, and as far as I'm concerned, it reduces the sunlight and daylight.
Paragraph 77 refers to daylight. So daylight is non-directional, it's the amount of sky you can see from your window. Paragraph 78 refers to sunlight, and it refers to two aspects of sunlight. One is the ability of the sun to penetrate a classroom, and the overshadowing is around outdoor spaces. So in effect, there are three sort of tests in those two paragraphs. Daylight, sunlight into a room, and overshadowing onto an external area.
Can I? So what, and I don't see that a comment has been made on it. What on the three exposed windows within that building that are not obstructed by the canopy and that will have a direct view of the proposed application on the table, what would be the impact of the overshadowing and, what would be the impact of the overshadowing on those windows?
Understood, Councillor.
When we use the term overshadowing, we're generally using that in relation to outdoor spaces. The first sentence of paragraph 78 talks about the sunlight impact and says that all rooms receive compliant sunlight, in other words, sunlight penetration into the room.
I understand it. So would, again, those windows be compromised and the light be compromised by the overshadowing? Because if you're talking about outside or outdoor buildings and objects, so presumably within the playground, and then you've got the proposal before us, what impact would that have on the width? Is it then compounded in terms of potential loss of sunlight?
What we're saying in the report is the sunlight meets BRE standards. So the sunlight, as received by the rooms, meets the BRE standards, so they're not compromised.
I'm sure we can seek clarification from the advocate or the agent later on. Are there further questions from members? Right, okay. Very good. Again, these are distinct subjects, I hope. Councillor Morris, first of all.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Could I just check with you, Yvonne, that backland development, as described in the residential design standards, only applies to build when you build at the back of a residential property, or does it apply to any property?
You're at an advantage of me because you've obviously got the document in front of you and I haven't. I think we're normally using that to refer to relatively small parcels of land contained within between the back gardens of other residential developments, but I can't remember that document well enough to know whether it defines that or not.
I mean, it does talk in terms of residential units, but obviously this is a development that is being put in the backyard of a building, and which is adjoining residential student accommodation and other accommodation nearby. So that's why I was just wondering whether or not it would apply. I think you want to have a look at the document to help.
We can possibly look into that. Can I take Councillor McCubbin?
Thank you, Chair. I was wondering whether we have any policy, planning policies at any level, whether it's a Southwark planning policy, London plan policy, or indeed national planning guidance, connected to or in any way discussing the issue of natural daylight in hotel bedrooms. There's something in the report, but I can't find it.
As far as I have seen from any of the policies at any level, there is nothing that specifically refers to natural light or ventilation into hotel bedrooms. There is nothing in the Southwark policies. I don't think there's anything in the London plan policies. It's an unusual situation, not something I necessarily would choose if I was going on holiday, but I think the view is, and I think we talked about this briefly the other evening, that you know, people coming to London, it's an expensive place to come to. They want to maximise the amount of money they have to spend out and about. They're willing to compromise on room sizes and other forms of amenities. They see a hotel room or somewhere that they would spend the minimum amount of time, and they simply use it as a place to sleep. And I think that's the view. The developer will probably explain their concept, but as far as I know, there is nothing that requires an external window in a hotel room.
Thank you.
Are there any policies, I'm sure there must be on this then, any policies which relate more to the more general amenity of hotel accommodation provided in new build development?
There is some London plan guidance, or it's a supplementary document to the London plan that I think it's the Accessible Hotels Guide, and it's around minimum.
Is it accessible?
Yeah, and it's around minimum room sizes, which, in terms of minimum hotel room sizes, the scheme would comply, but it is a draft document that hasn't been adopted, so it does have limited weight, and you know, it's a London. It's a GLA document. They haven't raised it in the stage one response. So at the moment, I think we have to give it a limited weight. But no, there aren't any adopted policy documents that refer to the quality of hotel accommodation kind of standards and so on.
Thank you. Thank you. If I can now move on to other planning material considerations. Councillor Jason.
Hi, thank you. I have another question on traffic. So, as I understand it, there is a development, well, not a development, there are two hotels 0.3 miles away from the proposed development, which is a Novotel hotel and an Ibis hotel, with total bedrooms of 477. And the proposed development is 220 bedrooms, that would mean a total of about 679 hotels within 0.3 miles of each other. My question is, for the hotels at Ibis and Novotel, can you explain to me what the traffic figures are around there? Because I'm just conscious that Blackfriars Road, particularly where the cycle lane is, from Blackfriars Road to Pocock Road, where the proposed development is happening at peak hours, if you've jumped in a bus or you've tried to, you know, go by car via there, it's very, very, very busy indeed. And there's loads of traffic, particularly between the times of 8 and 9 a.m. So considering Ibis and Novotel, can you explain to me what the traffic figures are around there? Because this development that's proposed is over half of the Novotel and Ibis put together. So if you could explain to me what the traffic is like around Novotel and Ibis, that would be useful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, when we assess planning applications, you don't, as existing traffic, you can look at it in terms of if you need to carry out junction capacity assessment. The only development that is taken into consideration is what you call committed development. If there's any approved scheme in the immediate vicinity of the site, then we take the traffic relevant to that development into consideration. But in this case, number 160 Blackfriars is on its own. The other application, which is close to it, is not being approved yet. So that cannot be, it's not hotel application. Oh, it has.
They're in place.
Okay. So if you look at the traffic related, even if we add the two together, this development proposal is projected to generate 24 two-way vehicle movements in the morning and 19 two-way vehicle movements in the evening. So before we can assess, if we need to assess the impact of the generated vehicular trips, we have to put that level of trips onto the existing vehicular movements around the development. That should pick up any vehicle movements that is associated with the hotel you're talking about, or indeed, or the general vehicular traffic. So you have to put that onto the existing vehicle movements, and then you feed that into a program called Picardy, Acadia, and so on, depending on the state of the junction. And then you calculate what you call the ratio of flow to capacity. And the desirable limit is always 0.85. So with this small vehicle movements, if you put down to existing vehicle movement, it'll just predict like 0.00 something effect. So it's pointless exercise. So that is why we wouldn't ask the applicant to go through and do further analysis. So it's pointless. But to be pointed to just development and looking at their traffic in isolation is not the practice we condone. You have to look at the existing vehicular movements and then put the development traffic on top of that and do your analysis.
I'm conscious of time, so I'm happy to revisit this later. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor. Again, a very useful observation, one for future consideration. Not tonight, but most certainly for future consideration. I'll take someone who hasn't spoken as yet. Of course, Catherine, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions. The first question should be quite quick. Is this a tall building under our definition of tall buildings? It is?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you. And the other question is, so the reason I've got that residential SPD out is because I was trying to find something about hotel accommodation because couldn't find anything separately. And I've also looked in the Southwark plan, which is it's pathetic actually what it says about hotels. It doesn't say anything about the design of hotels. It's certainly compared to some other authorities' proposed plans, neighbouring authority even. And so I just wondered, have I missed something? Is there a document somewhere that talks about standards for hotels or anything? Have we got absolutely nothing at all that governs how we might approach a hotel in terms of design standards or anything?
Not in terms of the internal standards. I think the only time we would be able to look at the quality would be if there was something about the hotel which would begin to have an external impact because it wasn't providing for its needs within the body of its building. So, for instance, if it was so crammed that we thought people would be, I don't know, queuing outside or something. I mean, I think beyond that, no, I don't think we have. And Simon will tell me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, there are no policy documents that talk about that.
Thank you for your response. And, of course, Catherine Morris and all members here and others, of course, the Southwark plan is currently out for consultation. And you are, of course, all able to contribute, particularly in this regard, to the emerging plan.
Not anymore.
Oh, you definitely can.
No, we've gone beyond that.
Not yet. But another discussion, another time. We can definitely influence the plan, I'm sure. Okay. Are there other contributions, first of all? Are there other contributions? Fair enough. So we can start the process. Okay. First of all, are there objector in the room that we can take note? If you could come forward, first of all, just one, is there two? Can I invite you all to introduce yourselves? Then I've got to point out you have 3 minutes. You can all speak. You can either split up your time. My advice always is that you might wish to direct the committee to ask questions subsequent to your presentation. So first of all, can I ask you to introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name is Sachin Shah. I live in Valentine Place.
I'm Andrew Hewitt. I'm the chair of the Globeview House Residents Association.
Catherine McKenzie, resident at Shortley Court.
Andrew Wood, the site resident at Shortley Court.
Thank you. Who will speak first?
I will, Chair. So thank you very much. We'd like to voice our objections to this, and many of our neighbours are here tonight, and we've spoken to many of our neighbours who share our strong concerns about this inappropriate proposal for a large hotel and what is now a small car park. There are 25 hotels in the immediate vicinity, with another 11 in the pipeline. The 1,849 rooms now in this immediate pipeline within half a mile of our homes exceeds the 1,795 extra rooms that the London plan envisages for the whole of Southwark by 2041. Our area is becoming saturated and the hotels are becoming over-dominant. We understand that this has been recognised in Lambeth Council's draft local plan, which proposes to block, as a matter of policy, any new hotel proposals in our area for that very reason. The officer's report fails to deal with the public objections to the applicant's frankly ludicrous assertion that the hotel would be in direct competition with only one other single hotel of those 36 hotels locally. The area needs more affordable homes, not more lifestyle hotel rooms. Secondly, the hotel is inappropriately located. It's squeezed into a small site with a service entrance directly opposite a large residential block and directly adjacent to a large student residence. The applicant says constructing the substructure would require an intense period of vehicle activity to ensure a continuous pour of concrete is achieved and that there will be a requirement for vehicles to arrive and depart outside of usual construction hours. The applicant fails to identify mitigants to the impact of this, and officers propose no specific restrictions on construction activities. The servicing hours proposed by officers are 7 to 10 most days. That would be far too long, it would be very disruptive. It would have a severe detrimental impact on neighbouring conservation areas. In terms of sunlight and daylight on Shortley Court, I'll speak for my colleagues. Here there is a severe impact on this. The officers repeatedly raise concerns about the height of the development. The developers tried to mitigate this by breaking up the design, but the fact remains that the developers are simply too big for this small site, and the scale is unnecessary, particularly compared to buildings such as Globeview House. And that's recognised in light assessments, with many windows failing to meet guidelines on Shortley Court, and also in neighbouring properties in Globeview House and Tadworth Court.
30 seconds.
Even by the developer's own demand report, the number of rooms in the hotel is not needed, and the proposal is not compatible with the Blackfriars Road SPD, as the building would be higher than the office building fronting Blackfriars Road. So we urge you to reject this application outright. If you don't do that, we'd urge you to defer the decision and ask the applicant to come back with a revised proposal for a smaller development and for the officers to reconsider the planning conditions, particularly around construction and servicing hours. We'd be happy to take questions.
Sorry, your time is now ended.
Can I ask for members' questions, Councillor?
Could you tell us what you wanted to say?
Yeah, I mean, thank you very much. Going to the point around overdominance of hotels in the area, we haven't seen occupancy rates of the existing hotels. So how can you say that another hotel is needed? It's an opportunity here to use a bit of land that we have in the area for something which is lasting, for people with a vested interest in the area, as opposed to real estate investment companies which are just developing this and flipping it on whatever they want to do with it. At the end of the day, some of the reports that even the council planning committee have produced are somewhat misleading, especially around traffic, where you consider the impact into important conservation areas which we won't get back ever. If you let things happen to them, they're destroyed. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever improves. And you've got someone here saying there's 24-day trips in and out in the morning at peak hours, but if you look at the evidence that's presented by the applicant, there's actually 200 taxi trips a day additional generated by this development, and that's a remarkable increase for some of the small roads that are around the area, and the impact on that is evident in some of the photos that my ward councillor will also present in his or has in his possession. And further to that, I've identified in a letter to many of you some of the areas where this increased traffic affects policy issues and actually acts contrary to those. And those, naming those specifically, the National Planning Policy Framework, the London Plan 2016, the Mayor's Transport Strategy, March 2018, the New Southwark Plan, the Greater London Authority points. And as a result, I don't understand how, on what basis, that the traffic flow, the impact on conservation areas, the impact to residents, has even been assessed and addressed properly. When me as a layman can identify many areas with an existing policy framework where this does not meet and in fact acts contrary to those policies and is harmful. We use the word harmful, but there are many areas where this is harmful to residents that are living here.
You must forgive me. I'm conscious that the question was asked, well, what you need to say, and I want to hear you. I'm just very conscious of our time frame. If you could conclude,
sure,
so we can ask questions
of
you.
Sure, I'm happy to conclude, yeah. My concern, in addition to the comments made earlier, is primarily around the protection of the conservation areas, the traffic flow through those, the traffic flow in the surrounding roads, the impact of vulnerable people, cyclists, because we now have the cycle highway, and pedestrians, and the impact on the character, which we won't get back in that area, and the fact that actually, for all of that pain, nobody has addressed the actual need for a hotel and the overdominance of hotels in that area. There is no occupancy figures. Show me occupancy figures.
Thank you. Cam McCann, yes.
Thank you, Chair. I'm certainly going to ask the applicant about occupancy figures and what their evidence is for the need for hotels in the area. So they've had a bit of warning. But two quick questions. Firstly, I think it was such a big number I didn't catch it. How many rooms did you say are currently?
According to the officer's report, there were 1,849 rooms in the immediate pipeline within half a mile.
Those already exist.
So there's 25 hotels. They have X number of rooms. There are a further 11, and those 11 in the pipeline, there's 1,849 rooms in that pipeline.
Sorry, I wrote down a number for the total number in the pipeline for 1,795.
No, so the 1,795 is the number of rooms that the London plan envisages that you'll need in the whole of Southwark between 2015 and 2041, a net increase in the whole of Southwark by 2041.
And just in terms of the 36 hotels that you've kind of cited within the immediate local area, how wide an area are we talking?
0.5 miles away from the 0.5 miles
radius.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for your very detailed answers. Can I ask you to please turn to your mic for a moment? Can I take Councillor Morris next?
Thank you. So obviously you've heard quite a lot of discussion and questioning about the traffic and everything, but you have realised actually, did you say you live in Valentine Place?
Indeed, yes.
I wonder if you could describe to me what I have to say. I'm using my privilege of my knowledge as a ward councillor here, so forgive me, Chair, but remind me what the situation is with Valentine Place at the moment with traffic.
Sure. So at the moment, there is, and I've, again, as a layman, understand a concept called rat running, which is essentially where, again, my understanding, traffic uses it as a shortcut to get to various other routes. It's an extremely narrow road. It isn't built for high volumes of traffic, and yet there are a number of service vehicles, vans, trucks, lorries that go down it on, you know, and as well as taxis, of course, using it as a cut-through frequently and heavily. Now, part of the reason for that is as you come out of Pocock Place, and this is the road structure in the area, which obviously, you know, maybe you haven't observed, but as people come out of Pocock Place, the only way you can turn right, you can't do it on Weber Street, where there is traffic control, where you would have a red light to prevent someone turning right and swiping a cyclist off his bike. At Valentine Place, which is the only other place where you can turn right as a result of that no right turn, you do have a cycle highway and no traffic control and plenty of rat running, plenty of trucks, plenty of cars just going through without seeing. In fact, almost on a weekly basis, I see a cyclist almost knocked off their bike. Further to that, the road is small, and when there is cars parked, you can't get a lorry around the cars and down the road. So even this morning, over a 10-second period as I left my house, I saw two cars go onto the pavement and drive on the pavement in order to go down there. And this is only going to get worse as you have more and more service vehicles going down that road. The volume of traffic is immense. The road is not built for that. And the whole entire traffic framework around there would have to be looked at if we're going to have, one, construction vehicles frequently using those roads and in the area, and two, taxis, which, again, as I reiterate, and it's slightly cued from the planning council, planning officers, to only focus on the traffic in the peak hours. Yes, it's important, but they've specifically done that to put a reduced number into the report. If you read the evidence from the applicant, there are 200 additional taxi trips alone on a daily basis. Alone. And that's not private cars, that's not Ubers, that's not minicabs, that's not, you know, coaches. This is just 200 taxis alone on a daily basis. The way 160 Blackfriars is, you have a taxi a parking loading bay right outside it. So someone's going to come out, load into there, go straight into Valentine Place. Someone on Pocock Street that needs to go to Waterloo is going to go straight down Valentine Place. The only reason for someone not to go down Valentine Place, which is a conservation area, I reiterate again, is if they're parked on Weber Street and they can go straight down because of the way the traffic control is organised. And at the moment, it's already intense. With a hotel, 200 rooms, who knows?
Thank you. Thank you again for your comprehensive response. Are there further questions to the objectors? I might ask you a few questions, if I may, just to ensure that there are some issues being raised earlier on about the school. Are you in contact with the school, and do you have any idea what the school thinks about the proposed development? Fire school, I believe, yes. Do you have any idea?
I don't believe that any of us are in contact with the school, but the way this forum, and I apologise for criticising, the way it's organised is, and as a group of objectors, how do I know this gentleman, how do I know this lady, and how do I know that gentleman? To give 3 minutes for us to actually organise to speak in this forum, it's totally unfair. And as a result, we can't go and approach... I'm not going to walk up to a school gate, you know, for this, for a number of reasons, right? So, ultimately...
I think it would be for the applicant to contact the school and ask to proactively contact the school and get the school's opinion. If the applicant could come here tonight and say what the school thinks, because the applicant has taken the time and trouble to go and speak to them, I would invite them to do so.
Indeed, but my question was, have you spoken to the school?
No.
I was interested to hear your view. We will hear from the applicant shortly. Second question, if I may. Just to understand, and I do appreciate the stats provided to us. It's quite an interesting set of stats, and it goes back to my earlier point that we need an overview of the impact of hotels and the impact it has on the immediate locality. Those figures, you sourced them from where?
They're in the office's report.
It was in the report you sourced them. Can I ask you to refer to, in terms of the London plan, or solid plan for hotel bedrooms within the borough, the figures you quoted, are you able to, just focus up, I'm not seeing it in the documentation, the number of rooms that's been proposed.
Can you say it's the London plan?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, and again, I want to thank you for that, because again, it's a further overview. Your experience in living immediately adjacent to the proposed development, that one, you're experiencing, and our visit suggested only a few nights ago that this is the case, that very few parking opportunities there, because they're always full. Mm-hmm. Would I be right in saying that?
Parking opportunities where would I?
Immediate to where you live. Are you able to park?
Well, not many people have cars. And quite frankly, I know there's one of the cases and one of the things that the planning officers mentioned about the car park space behind being disused and actually that somehow reducing emissions and reducing traffic. Well, if it's not used, then there's no traffic going through that car park anyway. So it's an irrelevant point that you're focusing on.
Can I say something about parking in particular at the weekend, which is that there are very heavy traffic parking restrictions on the street. As a Shopley Court resident, you can't even get residents parking, and there's no underground parking and the like. But if you go there at the weekend, and I face onto Pocock Street, or one fun aspect of my flat does, if you go there at the weekend, by 9 o'clock, the streets fall. And it's not us all bringing our cars to these streets at the weekend, you know, from our garages down the road that we're paying for. It's the fact that it is the transient population at the weekend. And, you know, I dread to think, frankly, what it's going to be like on a Saturday when you've got a stag party from Sheffield that's driven to London because it's cheaper than getting the train and decides to park on Pocock Street. And that's not me sort of, you know, making that up. That's the reality of what parking on Pocock Street is like in the weekend. It fills up by 10 o'clock. The yellow lines are full, the parking bays are full. It's rounded to Rushford Street and you cannot park anyway if you wanted to bring your car. And I think that has not been reflected at all. And that is, we can have a traffic assessment as till we're blue in the face, but the reality of having lived there since it was built 4 years ago is that parking is a nightmare at the weekend, and it's not helpful to the residents.
Thank you. Oh, sorry, yes, go ahead. Yes.
I was just going to add that, for context, there are 36 flats in Sharpley Court, and none of us have residents' parking permits. I think there's loads in Globeview House.
86, not our parking.
No parking permits.
And also in Valentine Place, the new development, you don't get a parking permit.
And the same for Manor Ash House, which is a massive student hall of residents. They don't have. I would imagine that they wouldn't have parking permits either. So this is the volume of people who are relying on the existing car parking spaces.
I want to thank you all for what is a very comprehensive response to our questions. Very, very helpful. And let's come to McCash. Yes, you want to ask a question? Go ahead.
My hand was up that time. Sorry, I have a question about, I think Andrew mentioned a point about height regarding the Blackfriars Road SPD. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could go over again, because it's quite quick, and expand the purpose.
Yeah, sure. So the Blackfriars Road SPD, I think it's section 5 of it, says that, in general, the height of buildings on Blackfriars Road, generally the heights will be taller along the main routes, with appropriate heights of up to 30 metres, depending on local context. Heights off the main routes will generally be lower. This proposal is, I understand, for a building which is going to be higher than 30 metres, and it's off the main route. It is not compatible with the Blackfriars Road SPD.
It's also higher than the building in front of it as well.
Exactly, and that's a key reason why it's incompatible with the Blackfriars SPD. It is higher than the building in front of it. It should not be permitted.
It's blocking out all the time.
Thank you. Very interesting indeed. Thank you very much for what is a very comprehensive response to our questions. Please be available for us possibly later on asking supplementary questions of you, but thank you very much. You can now be seated. Can I ask the applicant or applicant agents to come forward, please? Can I ask you all please to introduce yourselves and get to identify who will be your main speaker. At the point when you begin speaking, you have 3 minutes. So first of all, can I ask you to introduce yourselves?
Okay, my name is Oliver Shepherd. I'm a director at DP9, the agents for the application. I will be the main speaker.
Great.
Good evening. My name is George Steele. I work for Canaparo Associates, transport consultants.
My name is Jonathan Fletcher. I'm from Endurance Land. We're the applicant.
My name is Mark Bruce. I am with EPR Architects.
And my name is Andrew Cartmore from Point Two Surveyors. I'm the Daylight Sunlight Consultant.
Excellent. May we start now.
Thank you. The scheme before you tonight represents a further regeneration episode in the Blackfriars Road and South Bank story. It comprises a 220-bed hotel, associated hospitality activities, improved and expanded retail, affordable office workspace, and new public realm. The proposals represent a combination of over a year's work with your officers, local businesses, residents, the primary school, and the GLA. It's been subject to full public consultation pre and post submission. The school, who we've met on a number of occasions since the onset of the project, have expressed support, and whilst I understand they haven't responded directly to the planning application, we have met them on a number of occasions and they are supportive of the scheme. Support has also been expressed by some of the closest residents to the site, notwithstanding our comments raised in those that were sitting here previously. The proposals make a fuller and better use of a site that sits halfway between Southwark Tube and St George's Circus. The site currently has a modern nine-storey office building stretching across the full length of Blackfriars Road frontage with an empty surface car park to the rear. The office building, refurbished in 2015, is fully let and will be retained. On the car park, a new hotel is proposed to serve Southwark's working and tourism functions. A fundamental design principle is to unite the two parts of the site, and this is achieved through the creation of a new public realm known as Friars Yard, linking Blackfriars Road to the office building to the hotel at the back. Friars Yard draws its inspiration from yards around Blackfriars and borough districts. Friars Yard will provide an entrance and public sanctuary off the busy street, enlivened by the new hotel and associated uses. At the back of the yard, we propose a new 400 square metre affordable office workspace facility. The scheme would deliver many benefits. It would reuse a largely vacant site allocated for development in the new Southwark plan. It's in the opportunity area. It's consistent with the Blackfriars Road SPD. It would do this by maintaining the existing fully occupied office building at the front. It would deliver 116 jobs through the new hotel, restaurant, retail and workspace. It would deliver about 112 jobs during construction, and the £25 million estimated construction cost would benefit the local area. The new hotel would create about £7.6 million of annual local spending in the area from guests and visitors. That's spending at restaurants, theatres, galleries and museums.
30 seconds.
It would deliver a high-quality public realm in a vibrant mixed-use destination, a key objective of the Blackfriars Road SPG. Taken together, this is a big vote of confidence in Southwark's office, workspace and visitor economy and should be granted planning permission to allow work to start on site in 2019. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for being within time. Can I now immediately go to question? Councillor Jason, first of all.
Thank you for your representation. My question is to the gentleman from Kanaparo. So as I mentioned earlier to the officers in my question, I have spoken to a employee, a direct employee of Trix, and they mentioned that the only way of them observing an Uber driver is if a sticker is on the car. They also explained to me that for one reason or another, they're not able to stop the drivers, assuming they don't have a sticker in their car, in order to find out whether or not he or she is an Uber driver. So I was just wondering, was there an alternative methodology or alternative company that would take that into consideration in order for us to make more of an informed decision on the potential traffic that could be built up from extra Uber drivers?
So Alex has partly covered this. I agree with what he said. What I would add is, having done our own surveys and commissioned our survey companies to do similar sorts of studies, it can be quite difficult to determine whether a vehicle has a sticker denoting it as a licensed cab or not. However, I think particularly in this case, it's irrelevant when considering traffic impact, because what we're talking about is the number of vehicles. So whether it's an Uber or a private car or a black cab, what would be picked up is the number of vehicle movements. And when we're looking at traffic impact, that is what's key, and whether the number of vehicle movements will have a materially detrimental impact on the highway. So I take your point. It is difficult to sometimes gauge how many Ubers you might have, but we would record all the traffic regardless. So when we're looking at the traffic impact, we can be sure that we've picked up all the vehicles, regardless of what they are. And as Alex has said, and also TfL have confirmed, they have no concerns as highway authorities that the level of traffic generated would be detrimental, such that there'd be harmful effects of the scheme. Does that answer all your questions, hopefully?
I might just ask a supplemental on that, because it's clearly a feature of the objector's presentation to us, concern that the current roads appear on the surface to be already saturated in terms of parking positions.
And obviously you've visited the site, you're familiar with the layout, and you would have seen what we've seen on our visit, that all available parking spots were actually occupied. In that environment, would not an additional reason to bring to increase vehicle traffic flows in an area which is apparently already congested add to that congestion, and therefore the number of additional car movements which you're identifying is simply making what is a current really difficult situation even worse? Would you agree with me on that?
So I think the vast majority of vehicle movements will be by taxis, so they won't be looking for designated parking spaces. They are able to pick up and drop off from Blackfriars Road on the Red Route, and there are a number of lay-bys. So there would be a very small number of private car trips that, for example, could be looking for a parking space. There is a CPZ in the area, so for much of the week, they wouldn't be legitimately able to park in those spaces, otherwise risking a penalty charge notice. The site is located in a PTL 6B, so it's the highest accessibility rating you can have. Over 90% or around 90% of trips in total will be by sustainable modes, like public transport. So there's a very small number of vehicle trips. Of those, very few would be looking to park locally, plus it's controlled. And I think the council have written in their reports also that the applicant, and we would commit to this, would be prepared to sign to a permit-free agreement, thereby preventing any future users of the site from obtaining parking permits. So that would further go towards mitigating any potential harm.
Thank you. Further questions, come. Oh, if I may come, you must forgive me. Councillor Lauder wishes to speak.
Yes, I wish to ask you, you said you've had many meetings with Friars in primary school and they've not been objective about anything.
They said they were supportive.
Yeah. So we've met them on a number of occasions since the outset of the project, and they have worked with us to ensure that the school and the hotel can coexist as good neighbours. And there's been no formal objection, I think it was reported earlier. They've expressed to us support for the scheme.
I feel like somebody might have other questions based on that before you come back to me, Chair.
Okay, Councillor
Mahesh. Yeah, can we clarify a little bit more? Because I think you initially said that they were happy to coexist, which sort of, I suppose there's a difference between the school feeling that they have had their concerns listened to and they don't think they're going to get anything more. And that's quite different to saying they really want this to go ahead. And so I'd be interested to hear which one of those two things you mean, because it might be that they're really keen for a big hotel next to there, but I would be surprised to see what benefit they expect to garner from that.
We've met the school in a number of capacities throughout that consultation phase, both informally and formally. Part of the exhibition, we effectively put flyers into each of the pupils' things to ensure that the parents were aware that the school proposal, the hotel proposals were being consulted upon, and the school have, in a governance capacity, have been quite clear with us that they are happy for these to coexist. And as I said, there have been no representations from them to the planning application. As I said, we have met them on a number of occasions, going right the way back. In fact, we had more meetings initially before we actually started the pre-app process, because we were sensitive to the proximity.
Thank you. I'll take one more question on this, because the responses are being repeated. So unless the point is to extend or develop the discussion around the school, the responses I'm hearing are exactly the same each time. So unless you've got a completely new point in relation to the school, I'll take it.
Can you explain to me specifically?
Excuse me, Mike. Yep.
Can you explain to me specifically who you met and roughly when you met them?
I don't have particular names and dates to hand.
Positions of those in the school?
It certainly includes the head teacher of the school. headmaster.
All the details are contained within the statement of community involvement, and we've certainly met with the.
Forgive
Kim,
me.
My name is Kim Humphreys.
If you would, you could speak into the mic, it'd be useful. Oh, that goes to Dave. That wasn't deliberate, Kim, but you were.
It only goes in one way.
My name is Kim Humphreys, from Carville Ventures, engagement consultant for the applicant. We have met with the head teacher. We have met with the premises officer. The matter has been brought to the attention and discussed at a governor's meeting, and those, I think with the head teacher we've met on about three or four occasions. Those are the meetings we've had. As I said, they're all detailed in the statements of community involvement, and we've had no objections from them in terms of what we're putting forward. As Oliver mentioned, they have expressed support for what we're doing in terms of the site.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. I'm not going to take further questions on this call. Those answers are now becoming repetitive, unless you have a kind of distinct point. No, it's not about the school. Thank you very much, Kim. Go ahead, Councillor McCallum.
Thank you, Chair. So I'd like to ask about the principle of constructing a hotel in this locality, and I suppose quite specifically, I'd like to know what evidence you have that there is currently an undersupply of hotel accommodation in the Bankside area, bearing in mind we've already heard tonight that there are 36 hotels within half a mile of the site, either constructed or in the pipeline, with over 2,500 hotel rooms within them. What evidence do you have that that does not meet the demand for or need for hotel accommodation in Bankside?
Thank you. The evidence exists in two forms. One is through the Southwark local plan. The second is through the existing adopted London plan, which has set out a very clear need for a substantial number of more, you know, tens of thousands of hotel rooms. And the draft London plan, which was published last year, shows an even bigger number of hotel demands across London as a whole, but particularly within the central London market, and that the there is strong policy support within the CAZ, within the town centre, within the opportunity area for additional hotels. The second part arises from our own analysis, which is set out in a report that we produced with the application prepared by Jones Lang LaSalle, who are leading hotel agents, and they have identified that the occupancy rate of existing hotels in this area is currently running at about 85%, which is higher than the central London average of about 80%. There is significant confidence in the hotel development market, as has been pointed out by others, for hotel development in the Bankside area. I think it's worth pointing out that the point about clustering, within about 400 metres of this site, there are currently no hotels. The closest hotel to this site by walking is the Travel Lodge on Union Street, or the H10 on the western side, St George's Circus, just inside Lambeth. There are a series of hotels proposed at the north end of Blackfriars Road. But as I said, the point made about kind of clustering doesn't affect this particular stretch of Blackfriars Road between the cuts and between St George's Circus.
Just to pick you up on that final point, we about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, gave consent for a hotel literally pretty much on the other side of Blackfriars Road. So there is a site in the pipeline between Ufford Street and the Cut, which is currently being built. So I think it's quite important you don't mislead the committee. I think also citing tens of thousands of hotel rooms required across London does not mean they all need to be built in Bankside.
Councillor, if I may, I want to be sure that we stick to relevant planning matters.
And if there's a question, I'd like your question, please, now to be succinct, so we're able to expeditiously move. If you would, please, we can get you right away, then, please.
Can you just confirm, then, that the 85% occupancy rate you just cited is based on current hotel provision and does not include anticipated growth of already consented hotels in that pipeline?
That is a survey of existing hotel accommodation.
Okay, so the fact that's about to increase, that hotel provision is about to increase by 50% or thereabouts, would... Would indicate that the occupancy rate of hotels in the area, once those developments are built out, is not going to be at 85%. So within a couple of years, it won't be at 85%. It'll be much lower.
Sorry for interrupting again.
I just wanted to understand the way the analysis has been made.
I want to, it's important that these meetings are relevant to planning considerations. I do need to just make it quite clear that there's an acknowledgement that there are a number of developments in the pipeline. The applicant's able to refer to what is current. We could ask about future development, but I've said that we will need to at some point review what has happened to date, because these are permissions that this committee has made in previous times. And what I'm trying to avoid is a situation in which we are asked to speculate about impact. What we need is good evidence from officers as to what is the actual impact. And we don't have that impact assessment at this stage. So I'm very conscious that your questioning will either seek from the applicant a speculation, which is unhelpful, and unless you're going to put forward a material planning question from which you're seeking evidence vis-à-vis our policies, I would like to move the conversation on to other matters.
I'm happy for you to move on 1 second, Chair, because I've got the answers I wanted. But just to be really clear, my question was going to the heart of the planning policy, which is the question of whether there is an overdominance of hotel provision in this area. That's what I was getting at. And that is entirely relevant to planning matter for this application.
Indeed. So my response to you, of course, is the officer report. That's where the evidence is we're now seeking the evidence from. And unless, if I may suggest at this point, the question of the application is submitted to us as the planning committee is being considered on its merits.
Hold on.
So if it's being considered on its merits, the prior applications that have been approved by this committee is relevant, but not to this application. Yep. The applicant can't be answering these questions.
It's entirely relevant within the application of the policy as to whether or not there's an overdominance of hotel provision in the area. That's you can't consider that policy without considering what is already there.
Okay. I'd ask the planning officer, lead planning officer, to provide advice. As I can see it, this is an application we're considering on its merits. Okay. There is a wider consideration, which is alluded to in the report. But the applicant, it can only speak to their application. That's all. And you're asking the applicant to also speak about the wider area and the impact of this development on the wider area. And I'm suggesting to you that is not an appropriate question at this time. And unless planning officers can suggest otherwise and provide further guidance.
Chair, as we've heard, the policy position of Southwark Council does, as Councillor McCallum says, take into account the question of an overdominance of hotels in a particular locality. I think we didn't actually get to hear precisely what the question was, but I think if Councillor McCallum had a question that was about the number of hotels in the area and whether that was leading towards an overdominance of hotels in the area, I suppose it would be incorrect to say that it was completely irrelevant, but I think the members should concentrate on other ways of looking at the existing character of the area, whether it is characterised by an overdominance of hotels, and what difference would be made by this proposal to the character of the area. Councillor McCallum has a view that it's about numbers existing and numbers projected. That that's his view. If there is a simple factual answer that he is seeking from the applicant that may be answered, then I would suggest it may be relevant, depending on how you interpret the application of policy.
So a question, Councillor McCullum, if you could put forward a question.
My question was answered, Chair, which was about the analysis which has been conducted relating to the need and occupancy for hotel provision in the area. That was answered.
Very good, and I'm satisfied with that as well.
Chair, just very quickly, in support of Hamish's, Councillor McCullum's assertion, we were told that there isn't a numerical figure that, as in terms of guidelines, that we can follow. So we have to actually make a judgment. We were told that. That was a very clear steering from the officers. So I think he's perfectly right and to try and tease this out of the applicant and make those comments. I would support that. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Chair. So you referred to the Blackfriars Road SPD, as indeed I referred to it earlier on, and I also referred to the emerging Southwark plan. And neither of those identify. In fact, the site isn't identified at all in the Blackfriars Road SPD, which was produced in 2014. Indeed, Friars House was substantially refurbished in 2015, and in the emerging new Southwark plan, it is down to provide new homes. So why have you come in with a hotel application which is contrary to any of our policy documents for that site?
Just taking each one of those points in turn, at the time that the Blackfriars Road SPD was produced, there was a scheme that had been approved and was in the process of being built for the refurbishment you referred to and I referred to earlier for the office building. There at that time was no intent on behalf of the owners of the property at that time to do anything further beyond an office refurbishment. Obviously, the building is now fully let and is let for some considerable period of time with substantial employment flowing from that. The proposals have developed over the last 18 months or so. And I think it's fair to say that in a way that the proposals that have sort of been picked up in local plan, Southwark plan allocations. The policy allocation is drafted. First of all, it is drafted and it's prior to examination. I think points were made earlier about the weight to be afforded to it. But in any event, there is a general policy support set out in opportunity area policy and in CSZ policy for hotels in this part of the borough. And where there is a very high levels of public transport accessibility and serving a growing visitor and working economy.
Sorry, Chair. This is a site allocation in the local plan. Admittedly, it hasn't yet gone to the examiner, and the site allocation says provide new homes. It doesn't say anything about hotels in the site allocation in the local plan, and the local plan is the basis for the development. We have general policies and we have very specific site allocations, and this site is not allocated for a hotel, so why are you coming up with a hotel?
The draft allocation refers to a larger area of land, which includes the office building at the front, and it includes the foundry building to the south running onto Webber Street. Neither of those two sites are, as I explained, the office building within 160 Blackfriars is fully occupied. It's occupied for a lengthy period of time, and the foundry is a fully occupied office building. So this is a proposal brought forward as an opportunity, in an opportunity area, for part of the site which sits in an area which is generally supported, as it has generally enjoys a policy for additional hotels.
You have a response? Oh, Councillor Whittam.
We heard from, I think it was from the objectors, that the SPD states that the buildings behind should be smaller than the ones in front. Yet this is bigger than the one in front?
The building is the same height as the... So the building is effectively, you'd have seen it on the site visit, the existing office building is effectively a T-shape with a long elevation onto Blackfriars Road and a wing to the rear. The building we're proposing is the same height as the rear part of the T, protruding into the back part of the site, and about 3 metres taller than the front part of the site, so the front elevation. I think in the discussions we had during the pre-app process, a lot of work was done to establish whether the visibility of the building, I think it was shown in the officer presentation earlier, whether the visibility of that building would cause any issues for the hierarchy of buildings in the Blackfriars Road. And the fact is that the building is seen only very fleetingly in views from Blackfriars Road, most notably from the south, as you're coming across the Webber Street junction, and you see a very small part of the building behind the office building above the roof of the foundry. So a great deal of care and attention was spent through the pre-app process to get a design that was that sat within that context.
Further comments on heights. I suspect this will return to this later on. I need to question officers about this as well. I am conscious that you have a number of experts here. We've spoken to transport. And, gentlemen, at the end, you were... Yes, there you are. That's the one. It's always a topical one. But, of course, we've talked about the school. We've talked about shadowing in relation to school already. And I wonder... But it's your opportunity now.
With all due respect. Mm. So, what is the... I'm read on, and it refers in paragraph 79, transient overshadowing studying shows that there'll be some impact on classrooms that face or the playground space after 1 p.m. But there's a suggestion that that space is not used thereafter. What evidence do you have in terms of the discussions that you've said that you've had with the school? And I would and what is likely to be the impact on windows facing the overshadowing windows facing the playground that line the playground, please.
I'll first clear up the question about difference between overshadowing and sunlight tests. So there are two different tests. The sunlight test looks at sunlight to a room, as the officer explained, and overshadowing is about sun onto the ground. So you don't get a cumulative effect. There are different tests looking at the same thing, essentially. So in terms of the classrooms themselves, so we're looking at the sunlight test, and we're looking at how much... When is there a direct sight of sight, if you like, the yellow disc, the sun in the sky, through to the windows? And we assess that using the average probable sunlight hours test, the APSH test, and that shows that the classrooms will continue to enjoy good levels of sunlight in accordance with the BRA guidance. So when you talk about overshadowing to the windows, that just essentially means when is the sun not directly shining onto the windows?
Because by definition, that's going to reduce the amount of light entering the classroom.
To some extent it will, but like I say, you split up the daylight test and the sunlight test, and then overshadowing is onto space on the outside of the ground.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just concerned. It doesn't matter by which assessment you take, whether it's a vertical skyline, direct sunlight. I'm concerned about the light that enters the classroom, and the opportunities or the impact that will have on the young people in that space, in that learning environment, to work.
Thank you.
So that is what I'm interested in. So what is the likely impact of overshadowing, call it what you will, sunlight, daylight, the loss of light entering the classroom space?
I'm trying to say, in short, there will be some loss of daylight and sunlight to the classrooms, but they are principally within the BRE guidance. So it is considered small and
if you like, not material under planning policy.
Thank you. Unless there are further questions. Oh, Councillor McCunnam.
It just didn't influence my judgment, that's all. Indeed.
Thank you, Chair. Right, I've checked some planning policy. This is back to the point about the quality of the accommodation, and in particular with respect to the rooms within your plan which don't have windows in them. So under the London Plan 2016, it is a requirement that new build visitor accommodation should be of high quality design, such that it may be accredited by the National Quality Assurance Scheme, which I think, if I've interpreted this correctly, is the Visit England scheme. And that scheme requires that, in order to be even considered for accreditation, every bedroom must have at least one window. So I'd like to ask how you believe you comply with the London Plan.
I'm going to defer part of that question to the architect, who's a hotel specialist architect. But essentially, there are no formal planning policies that require hotels to comply to particular space or daylighting standards in the same way that you would apply to residential accommodation. And essentially, that is down to the transient nature of the of those who book those hotel rooms. So those who stay in hotel rooms choose to book them or choose not to. So for some visitors, it'll be fine to book into a windowless room for a certain price because they might be going to see something at the Old Vic and they're only going to sleep there. For others that might value the room, they can book in alternative locations or alternative parts of the hotel.
So to supplement what Oliver has said, yes, so just to be clear, beyond planning policy, the hotel has been designed in terms of all relevant British standards and building regulations, so fully compliant in terms of those. Just to add what Oliver said as well, lifestyle hotels such as this, the clients do offer opportunities. So there's some bedrooms that have larger windows. There's some bedrooms that look onto the active courtyards. There are other bedrooms with windows to give the guest an opportunity as to which type of stay that they want, and they're clearly allocated on the website. You will never have a guest arrive not knowing that they have booked a specific room.
Okay. With respect, neither of you have answered my question, which is how you believe you comply with London Plan Policy 4.5CB, which is the policy I've just cited at you. I don't see how you comply with it, and I'd like to know your answers for that.
So I think we have responded to that point about the kind of the overall quality of the hotel provision and the nature of the accommodation and the fact that those booking
You told me there might be a demand for that type of hotel, which I don't dispute, but I'm saying how do you comply with that policy?
Well, we believe that we comply through the general application of high quality design standards to the hotel as a whole. As I said, there is a choice of hotel rooms.
Okay, Councillor. Okay, we're going back and forth. The answer's not changed. So the answer you receive is the answer. It's duly noted. It is duly noted. I need to keep moving us forward. Councillor Soames.
Oh, just on the back of that, what's the impact on energy costs on a windowless room?
As you're probably aware, all new build accommodation is under strict sustainability guidelines now. This building will fully comply with that, and we're looking to achieve the best BREEAM standards possible. The majority of these hotel bedrooms will be mechanically ventilated because of acoustic reasons. So, actually, in some instances, rooms with windows that are have direct sunlight can sometimes take more energy because you're cooling the room rather than heating the room. So all of these rooms are mechanically ventilated and mechanically heated.
Thank you. Thank you. If I may, Councillor, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I want to thank you for your presentation, your comprehensive answers. If you could be sitting there at the front, you'd be available for the questions if necessary. Thank you very much. Can I ask for a supporter of the application to step forward, please? Is there a supporter in the room who lives within 100 metres, of course? Have a seat. Can I ask you please to introduce yourself, and then I'll give you 3 minutes. Please introduce yourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can we press the button, I believe, the black button, I believe. Can you just confirm where you live as well?
Thank you. My name is Roz Ramsey. I work in Southwark and I also live on Webber Street in the Priory. And I'd like to just speak briefly in favour of the development. Essentially, I moved into the Priory a year ago, and arriving in my flat, I'm on the ground floor of the Priory, there is a large empty car park in the back. And I've always had anxiety about what use might be made of that car park, because it's waiting for something to happen there. And I think I'm really just wanting to very briefly say, when the information about the planning came through, I contacted the property developers. I found them extremely responsive. We met, we looked at the plans. I've met them at the exhibition in Blackfriars, in Blackfriars Settlement. I've also met their architect. My flat is directly overlooked by the development, and I was very concerned about how I'd be affected by the development as a local resident. And the developers and their architect have redesigned the angle of the roof of the single-storey affordable workspace. And I feel maybe it's kind of character reference, but I think they've been very responsive to my very real concerns since I learnt about the development. And I was very anxious when I first knew there was going to be a development on the site. But I do feel they've responded. I was very impressed with the quality of the papers that were produced, the light survey. I was able to identify exactly how each of my rooms would be affected. And on balance, I thought it was a reasonable plan. I also looked at their other properties on their website, and I liked what I saw. So I'm here to speak in support of the development.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can I ask you to turn off your mic for a moment? And if I may, with the indulgence of the committee, ask for a 5-minute comfort break. Would that be right before we begin questioning? Would that be right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Would that be right, members? Yep.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Thank you. Can I ask you all please to take your seat? I've got an announcement to make, first of all, before we begin the proceedings. I've spoken with members of the committee, and I think we'll do it formally. We're conscious of time. It's now 10:15. We have a remaining item which we have yet to get to. So the view of the committee at the moment, and we'll do this by resolution, is that the last item be deferred until our meeting of the 29th of October. Now, is the proposal on the table. Can I seek a seconder?
Seconded.
Okay, thank you. Can I ask for those members to express those who are in favour of the motion that we defer this item to 29th of September? Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Now, before we begin this proceeding, I'd like to go out and speak to members of the public to explain why we've had to take this decision. One moment, please.
Discharge this poor lady, Martin.
Can I ask all members and others to please take your seats? And we are missing a member. Where is that member? Can we exit? And thank you for bearing with us. Okay. Is there questions to the supporter? Is there a question, members, to the supporter? Yes, Councillor Jason.
Thank you for your representation. I had a question in regards to some of the things that you were concerned about initially that were addressed. Are you able to shed a bit more light on that, please?
I think it was partly a fear of the unknown, so getting a piece of paper through the letterbox for the Priory saying there is a planning application starting and makes you worried. You think, what's going to be in my backyard? Because my back garden is a very long strip that runs right along the edge of the car park, so I'm very directly affected by whatever happens in the car park. And I always thought in the back of my mind when I bought the flat, something's going to happen there. You're not going to have an empty car park in the middle of central London without some plans. So in a way, it was anxiety, but also I'm quite pleased now to know what's been discussed and what might what might happen there.
Councillor McCubbin.
Can I just confirm from my understanding... I'm going to just use it with this aid, if that's all right. Yes. Am I right in assuming you live sort of here? This is your garden? Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Yes, it's the bit nearest, just for everyone else's benefit, it's the bit nearest the single-story part of, the single-story commercial.
So
the hotel itself.
No, so in fact, in negotiation and discussion with the developers, they were going to have a separate wall for the single-story affordable workspace, and we've agreed that it would be more sensible to have a shared party wall if it's built, which I think would work better for them and work better for me.
Further questions? In that case, then, I would thank you for being with us and thank you for your comprehensive response to our questions. Have a good evening. Thank you. Can I now ask for a ward councillor to come forward? Okay. Can I ask you please to introduce yourself, and when I indicate, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Councillor David Nakes, and I'm a Borough and Bankside Ward Councillor. Thank you. Thank you, members. I'm going to ask you to refuse the application for the following ground on the following reasons. Firstly, the suitability of the site in policy terms for a hotel. Secondly, what I would suggest is the overdevelopment of the site. And thirdly, the harm that has on the existing residential amenity. I think we've heard that there is clear evidence that there is an overdominance of hotels in SE1. We've heard about the very high number of hotels that exist in SE1 already that have been consented, the 25 hotels, that 3,659 rooms, and over 1,000 more rooms consented. I'd also make the point that Southwark has already met and exceeded its target of new hotel rooms for the period 2007 to 2026. So I don't think that should be lost. The fact that which Councillor Morris picked up, that the emerging new Southwark plan does not identify this site for hotel use, but for new homes. And the Borough and Bankside's London Bridge SPD advises that suitable locations for hotels include the northern end of Blackfriars Road. The southern end is very residential in nature. I'd also point you to the news from Lambeth Council based on its response that it's had to consultation, which have indicated in their draft policies to the Lambeth local plan that they would not support more hotels. And I'd like to point you to their statement. The concentrations of visitor accommodation constrain other important uses and change the character of the area. Given the existing numbers and concentration of hotels in Waterloo, additional visitor accommodation will not be supported. And the point that this is making, obviously, is that in developing this site for a hotel, a use that has not been identified, we are basically losing the opportunity for more affordable housing and for more community facilities, such as, for example, as a GP or health facility, or, in fact, an expanded primary school. The second point I would remind members of is that of the 52 responses, 50 of them were against this from local residents. And there is real evidence of the harm that this would do on existing residential amenity. And I would point to that is the loss of daylight that's identified in the report for some of the premises in Globeview House and Bridge House Court, the closeness of the new proposed hotel to existing residents below the 21-metre guidance in the case of Priory, the Bell, Manor Ash and Friars Primary School, the impact of the servicing from Pocock Street on existing residents and Valentine Place Conservation Area, something that we already have evidence of in regards to the Sainsbury's use of that servicing of that area, which already causes problems for residents.
30 seconds.
The height of the existing building at 10 storeys, over 30 metres, which is the policy guidance. And all of these points, I would suggest, demonstrate that this is an overdevelopment of the site. I do have some suggested conditions and additional conditions which I would also like members to consider, which I would like to invite you to for me to suggest what they should be, but I would very strongly urge you to refuse this application.
Thank you very much. Can I ask, are there further questions from members? Councillor Whittam.
Councillor Oakes, have you been in touch with the primary school about this?
I've only been in touch with them indirectly through some of the parents at the school who are active in the parents group. And my understanding is that the school, as the applicant have indicated, have not obviously formally objected. I also believe that the school have been in discussion with the applicants and that mutual agreements have been made in regards to, I think, to the boundary walls, etc. Now, whether that is the reason why they haven't decided to oppose the application, I don't know. But that's, I think, what's on record anyway. But I haven't personally spoken to the head teacher.
Other questions? Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Chair. Although obviously you've asked us to reject the application, you did allude to some conditions that might make it acceptable. I wonder if you wanted to run through what they might be.
Thank you very much, Councillor Morris. So I want to draw your attention to two existing conditions that are in the report. One is condition 26, which is in relation to the roof terrace. The proposal is that the hours should be up until 10 p.m. In consultation with the residents, bearing in mind the residential nature of this area and the fact that there are a number of families with children, I would suggest that the time should be more restricted. It should be 8 p.m. In regards to condition 29, the servicing hours, as listed, are from 7 in the morning till 10 at night, Monday to Friday, and the same on Saturday, and also servicing on Sundays and bank holidays. I would suggest that the daytime servicing hours rather than 7 till 10 should be, again, taking into account residential, should be 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. And I don't see the need for any servicing on Sundays and bank holidays. I don't think that's something we always put in our conditions. I don't know why we're being so generous in that sense. I think everyone's entitled, knowing the problems already exist with servicing. I don't think they should be happening on Sunday or bank holidays at all. And then in relation to two other points, or three other points, one is obviously the report talks about having, recommends that there should be a hotel management plan and a service management plan, which I think will be in the section 106. I think it's the normal process for that. I'd just like to make sure that both those plans are going to exist, and also that there will be a construction management plan as well, because again, that's alluded to, but it's not, there's not any confirmation that that's going to exist. And then my final point would be to actually add a condition, and that is, we heard from Sachin, who lives in Valentine Place, about the concern, and from other residents about the additional traffic and how that might displace or increase traffic movements in the residential roads around there. And I think there should be an additional condition requesting a traffic management study, say within 6 months of, should you consent it, say 6 months or a year of the hotel opening, to consider whether there's any mitigating actions that need to be put in place. But I would like to say, having said all of that, that I very strongly believe on policy terms that this is not a suitable site for a hotel, and that you should turn the application down for the reasons I gave at the beginning of my 3 minutes.
Councillor McCullum.
Thanks, Chair. I've got two quick things on conditions, just since we're kind of there. Just on the traffic management study, are you suggesting that we just need to try and condition for a study to occur after the development is completed? Would there be benefit in having some form of study prior to it being built out, so that there is a baseline assessment? Just to be quite pedantic on that point.
I mean, obviously transport officers may be able to better answer this as to whether that we have enough evidence already about the amount of the impact of traffic in the area. I would suggest that it's already bad. We certainly get lots of complaints about the level of traffic, particularly in the residential roads. Whether there is an advantage to doing a pre-study and then a post-study, I'm happy to be guided by the transport officers on that, but I certainly think there should be a post-study, for sure.
I've got one other on conditions. I noticed that, where was it? Condition number 27 says that the hotel, bar and restaurant shall close to non-guests at midnight on Monday to Saturday and 11 o'clock on Sunday and bank holidays. I suppose I wanted to ask, firstly, whether you're happy with those hours, and secondly, whether it strikes me there also needs to be opening hours in that, not just closing hours, or else in theory it could open a minute after it closes on weekdays. I just really wondered whether you had any comments on that particular point.
And we had a brief discussion about it. I think that was not our primary concern. I think our concern was more about the roof terrace and the servicing hours, I think, because those are the things that we know already cause problems for residents. And nearly everybody around the proposed site of the hotel are residential, apart from the school perhaps. But, I mean, otherwise you have residents all around in 360 degrees. So, yeah, I don't know. I sort of assume that those are fairly standard hours, so I thought they would probably be... we'd have to live with, I guess. But I'm happy if members think that they should be reduced. I'm sure the residents will be delighted.
Thank you. Yeah, Councillor Morris.
Well, I was just going to say, so the restaurant hours in condition 28, the restaurant hours are, you know, the A3 uses, that is, not the hotel restaurant, is limited to opening at 7 o'clock, rather than before. So,
Sorry.
So would you think that would be appropriate to include the same hours for the restaurant, given the open to the public element of the restaurant and bar within the hotel?
That's the commercial, not in the hotel.
Yeah. Do you think that would be?
The hotel should be open to non-residents at 7 o'clock.
So the new
the new restaurant that is going to be part of the development that's got nothing to do with the hotel, it's just a kind of the A3 offer, has got, in the conditions, the hours are, the closing times are the same, but the opening hour is 7 o'clock. So there is that kind of break. So we could put that on the hotel use for non-guests. Obviously, if you're a guest there, you want to come down and have your breakfast. If you need your breakfast at 6, you need your breakfast at 6. But for non-residents or non-guests of the hotel.
Yeah, I think that seems reasonable.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? No? In that case, and Councillor Noakes, I want to thank you very much for your presentation and your comprehensive responses to our questions. Thank you. We now go into the short debate on matters heard thus far. First of all, are there any desires for clarification, any point been raised thus far, first of all? Go ahead.
Can I go full circle on the, not the principle of the hotel issue, but the point about the quality of the accommodation, in particular the rooms without windows? Obviously, during the meeting, I did some reading. So I just really wanted to see whether officers had any comments on that particular policy, which I cited to the applicant, which is, just to remind you, it's policy 4.5 of the London Plan, specifically paragraph CB, which requires that hotel development should promote high-quality design so that it may be accredited by the National Quality Assurance Scheme, which in itself requires as a baseline that hotel bedrooms should have a window in them. If I've understood the brief bit of that scheme that I've read, it describes it as a minimum entry requirement. So a hotel not complying with that simply couldn't even be considered as accreditable under that scheme. So given that, it reads to me that this application simply cannot comply with that in any way, not even, you know, not particularly, you know, compliant. It simply cannot comply with that aspect of that of the London Plan policy. So I just really wanted to know whether you had any comments on that. Sorry.
I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know enough about the accreditation scheme to comment. I don't recall, I don't know whether, Simon, you do, any other hotel schemes we've had in the borough that have had internalised bedrooms. We've had some very small rooms in some hotels. I can't recall any with internalised bedrooms. So we haven't come across this point in terms of meeting the tests for accreditation. So it's a new one for us. I haven't got it in front of me, but listening to your reading of it, I take your point.
If I may just ask for a supplementary on that point, I'm aware of at least a number of hotels in London which have rooms but do not have windows. Easy Hotel, it happened to know. There are no windows. I'm astonished, therefore, they were able to be built and achieve accreditation, I must say.
We don't know if they have accreditation. What we would say is it's a GLA policy, and the GLA, in making their Stage 1 report to us, supported the application, didn't raise it as a concern. So we'd be relying on a policy from the Mayor's office, which they haven't raised as a concern.
I think that's quite a striking...
Supplementary to that, though.
Okay.
So did they specifically say in their response that it complies with policy 4.5 in its entirety, or did they just not happen to mention anything in respect of that element of policy?
If I can recall the response, they listed the policy. They didn't specifically say that it didn't comply with it. They just they were silent on it. They said they supported the use. They didn't say that it complied or didn't comply, but they did list the policy, so they were aware of it.
And you, of course, see, members, why it's so important these early briefings and interactions we've had with officers prior to the meeting would have paid dividends, you see. But anyway, other questions?
I did raise it last week at the briefing.
You did?
So, just to put that on record.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Are there other questions? Councillor Stone? No? Councillor Morris, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I wondered, Yvonne or Terence, whether you've got any response to the backyard development or the backland development that is in the residential design guide.
Well, my suggestion to the committee was that we could give it limited weight in the context of this application because of two or three things. One is it sits within the residential design standards SPD, so I think you could interpret that as being of no relevance to this application. And reading the section that you pointed out, it talks about those being located predominantly to the rear of existing dwellings, dormitory sites, garden buildings, sheds, in the gardens of surrounding houses and so on. So I think if you were to take any of those statements and attempt to apply it to this site, I mean, this is a site which is part of the curtilage of a large existing building, as opposed to a site being isolated for a different use, which is what backland development usually is. It's usually creating a new plot, in effect, at the back of a housing plot. This is integrated with the land, with the building at the front of the site, so a little bit different. So I would not encourage you to attempt to use this in the determination of this application.
Councillor Sims.
But with all due respect, Yvonne, interestingly, you commented when we did go on the site visit that the plot of land that this application is referring to was not readily not compliant, but it didn't lend itself, the configuration of which didn't lend itself to residential
could you elaborate, please?
I think that's a sort of slightly different point. But I think what I was saying was that the, as some of the councillors raised, the allocation in the new select plan talks about this being a site for homes. I think that designation assumes that the entire site is being redeveloped and therefore gives you more options in terms of how you could configure it to give good amenity to any dwellings that were going onto the site. If you were to put new residential onto the site whilst the existing office existed, which is what this application's, the context of this application, it would just be more difficult to get good quality flats, a good outlook and good amenity space because of the limitations placed by the nine-storey office building on the frontage and the shape of the site.
So are you suggesting, therefore, that if that plot were to be developed for residential use, the office building would have to be demolished?
I'm not saying it would have to. I'm simply saying that the quantum of residential you could get onto the rear land would be limited because of the need to give the new residents outlook, you know, taking into account the volume of the office building that's on there at the moment. So you would just get a lesser quantum of housing on there than you would get if you did a comprehensive redevelopment of the site.
And is that, sorry, just my last point, is that just specific to the current plot or the entire car parking space?
That applies to the car parking space. If you were to redevelop the entire site, obviously that opens up a lot more options for you in terms of how you could lay it out in a way which probably you could get commercial space and housing space or housing units to be entirely compatible on the site. It would be much easier to do it if you had a comprehensive development of the whole site.
Kathy Whittam.
Because of the height of the building, do you believe it does comply with the Blackfriars SPD?
We believe that it generally does comply with the Blackfriars Road SPD. It is generally in line with the height. As the cross section shows, there is a it's not just the building on the front that is immediately apparent on the site. It's a T-shaped building which has a lift and a lift overrun in the leg of the T, and the height of the building to the rear generally rises to that height. So it's not significantly taller. it is roughly the same height as that building that exists there at the moment. The next consideration that we had was how it will appear when viewed from the local area. And it was clear that given the scale of development in the area and the configuration and the arrangement of roads and so on, is that it would be, you know, very little visibility would be available to of that building to the rear, and it would always appear subservient to the building on the front. So you'd get a glimpse of it, but not, it wouldn't loom or dominate the building at the front. So we believe that it conforms with the guidance that was in the SPD. The guidance in the SPD alludes to, refers to and takes into account the fact that the Blackfriars Road SPD area isn't just the corridor of the Blackfriars Road, but a wider area that extends into the sort of wider area beyond Blackfriars Road and extends to some sites further along, Glass Hill Street and so on, being areas in this area that would be included in the SPD. And the idea there is that in that wider area, the guidance should be very clear that the predominant and the main area for the SPD, for height, will be on Blackfriars Road, and that heights generally in the wider area covered by the SPD should be at a lower level. So this is taken as a site that's on Blackfriars Road, in effect, and as it conforms and is generally in the same height as the building on the front, we are satisfied that it conforms with the guidance in the SPD.
Thank you. So we've had our points of clarification, and there have been some suggestions as to amended conditions. We might just want to look at those conditions, what you wish to amend, just see what the general feeling is. I think McCallum, you wanted to...
I wrote down all of the ones that Councillor Nick said, so if you want me to just run through them, I'm happy to do that. The roof terrace, I would certainly support and propose that if the application were granted, the condition on hours of use be varied from 10 p.m. ending time to an 8 p.m. ending time. I think that makes a lot of sense. The servicing hours, we actually heard in respect of the previous application we considered tonight what the standard servicing hours are, and were asked why we would seek to deviate from that. The hours proposed, I think, in the conditions at the moment seem to deviate more generously from those standard hours. So I don't quite know why this application hasn't been subjected to the same standard Southwark hours. I don't know if officers wanted to comment on that. But I would be happy to support the recommendation that Councillor Noakes made in regard to servicing hours being 9 till 8, Mondays till Saturdays with no servicing Sundays or bank holidays. Or indeed to default back to the standard Southwark servicing hours, but certainly have anything more generous would seem to be unreasonable.
I suggest if
do you want to take one at a time?
Yes, for a proposal.
I suppose in that case there's a question then in respect to that one, which is why the hours are beyond that would normally be put into this.
I'm not sure why that's a standard condition that I put on. I don't recall amending it, but I wouldn't have an objection to changing the servicing hours.
I suppose in that case, apart from anything else, given the proximity to a school and also the presence on a main road, I actually think that a 9 a.m. Start time for a servicing window wouldn't be unreasonable in this case, and then an 8 p.m. ending time, which is in line with our normal hours. Monday to Saturday, if we could make that the condition, I'd propose that we did that. Councillor Nick mentioned about the hotel management plan, the servicing management plan, and the construction management plan. I just wanted to check that those were caught somewhere within the
I can't. I'm sure there used to be a condition for these things, but I feel like now it more commonly is not. It's more commonly in the Section 106 agreement. So I just want some assurance that it was going to be picked up somewhere.
They are all referred to in paragraph 115. So the Section 106 will secure a service management plan, an environmental management plan, a construction logistics plan, a hotel management plan, a travel plan, and amendments to the traffic management order.
A construction logistics plan, is that the same thing as a construction management plan? Yeah, perfect. Okay. And then the traffic management study, is it possible to add that in as a condition? Or is it? I mean, it's not really a condition, it's more of a Section 106 requirement, I suppose. But is that possible to add it in any way?
We did something similar for the, I think it's called Lesotho of the court, yeah, where we have, is to, for them to review the drop-off and the collection of patrons around in the immediate locality and within 6 months of occupation. So after 6 months of occupation, they'll do a survey. They do another one 6 months after. So that they manage how the impact of taxes on the hotel.
Is that specifically in relation to, because I remember when we were discussing the hotel behind the SoCo, the issue there primarily was the address, well, not primarily, but part of the issue in this context was the address of the hotel and where taxes would pull up and whether they'd be pulling up on the cars and whether there's space. So when you say they'd be monitoring drop-offs and pickups, do you mean specifically in terms of where vehicles are pulling up to, or do you mean traffic movement, because they are two separate things?
No, it's both in a way, because residents were complaining around there that most of the taxis will come onto their road. So that's why we wanted to know the drop-off area, you know, barring all the other residential streets behind the hotel, so that they would not have significant impact on those residential areas. So it's both together, vehicle movement, the movement of those taxis and the drop-off, with the exception of what we've done is we've excluded the patrons with mobility requirement, that they can be drop-off anywhere really that is convenient, and children, because we like to encourage safe drop-off for patrons with young children.
Okay. So I suppose then if the same thing can be incorporated into the, if this application is granted consent, and I think that's sort of a big if, but if it were to be granted consent, then if that could be incorporated into this consent as well, that would be good. And then the final thing, which is the one I raised, was about the opening times within condition 27. I would have thought there needs to be an opening time as well as a closing time. So if it's most sensible for that to mirror, was it condition 29 or 28? The one for the age reuse, then that makes sense. I think that was what Professor Morris said. So just mirroring those times would seem reasonable.
Yeah, taking a note that if it does get approved, to mimic condition 28 in terms of the opening.
Did you do the roof terrace as well?
Yes. That was the first one I did, although I didn't actually ask anyone if they agreed, but I just went through it.
It's on the table at the moment. Are there further suggestion to revise conditions? Are we right? So there's a series of proposals put forward by Councillor Cullum. Are we minded to second and approve?
In terms of the conditions?
Yes, those conditions. Those conditions. Is there a second, first of all?
No?
Well, he put forward a
conditional. If we are going to release what we didn't put a motion.
Which one? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to propose that we refuse this application for a whole host of reasons, which I'm happy to expand on now. Or you may wish to confer with other members to see what their views are first.
Okay, first of all, if there is a second for the refusal.
I'm happy to second.
We have a proposal, seconder. I'd like to now move to the vote.
Well, seeing the reasons.
Oh, perhaps the reasons.
Thank you, Chair. I believe that a hotel is not an appropriate use of this land. It is not. This site is not designated either in the Blackfriars Road SPD or in the emerging Southwark plan or anywhere else as a site suitable for a hotel. It also, there is an issue about the heights, as was raised. It breaches the recommended height for that area of Blackfriars Road as listed in the Blackfriars Road SPD. A tall building, where are we? Oh, tall buildings which are above 30 metres, which this is. Apologies, I can give you the detail on that later, but it's definitely in the SPD that this is not an appropriate site for a building that's over 30 metres. In terms of the hotel, I know we've had much discussion about whether or not we have reached saturation with hotels or overdominance. Again, I would like to point out, yes, I know it is an emerging SPD, Southwark plan, but all of the site allocations in Blackfriars Road that are listed in the Southwark plan, none of them mention hotels as an option. They all refer to redevelopment, that the only thing that you get. So obviously anything that's an office building says that they should re-provide the office because it is in a central activity zone. And redevelopment of the site may provide new homes in most cases, and occasionally it says additionally provide cultural uses, but there is not any mention in our policies, in our most recent and most up-to-date emerging policies, that or any other of the sites in this plan are suitable sites for a hotel. I think it is overdevelopment as well of that space. I take the point about it being an underutilised car park and we should be making efficient use of space. I get that. But I think a 10-storey hotel in that particular site does represent an overdevelopment. I think the overshadowing on the school playground will have an impact on that, and I think that we can take into consideration some of the impacts of daylight and sunlight impacts on the local residents, including the students, actually, even though I know that technically the students aren't covered. I think it is an important consideration. It is right up against those buildings. Do I need to give you... Oh, the London plan. Yeah. Thank you for the prompting. The London plan policy...
4.5, section C, subsection B, and the interrelationship that that has with the... National Quality Assurance Scheme, which... I believe it's the Visit England National Quality Assurance Scheme. A lot of things are called that, but that seems to be the one which is applicable.
I would also refer as well, is it the London plan that has set the figure for the amount of hotel bed spaces that are required from Southwark? And now that I know that there's nothing to say that we can't exceed that, but given the concentration of hotel bed spaces, existing and in the pipeline, we believe that with all the other factors combined, that the particular location of this is not appropriate. I mean, we think we've got too many anyway, but particularly this part of Blackfriars Road is not a suitable location for another hotel.
Can I just add? Just to be very specific about it, you mentioned overdominance, but just very specifically that it, in my view, contravenes SAFE policy 1.2 of the Southwark plan. In addition to any relationship it has with the new Southwark plan, I would consider it to be overdominant in the context of the wording of that plan. My interpretation of that.
Sorry, we have 1.12. That's 1.2. Sorry, I kept reading 1.2 and I kept searching for 1.2. 1.12.
Okay. Right. I'm now going to bring in the legal officer to provide advice to the committee.
Members, we've heard a number of reasons for refusal, and I'm going to issue my standard health warning at this stage. We've got an officer recommendation for approval, and the officer's given strong reasons, strong policy reasons, particularly in relation to the provision of a hotel. And therefore, I would warn you against voting against that recommendation, because there may have may be consequential issues as far as an appeal against the council and a possible costs award. Having said that, you've given us a long list of reasons for refusal, and certainly the discussion that was had with the applicant over the provision of hotel spaces and whether or not that took into account the hotels which are currently permitted and under construction is something which I assume you have taken into account in coming forward with your decision, which you look like taking. But as I say, it is always at this stage customary to warn you against a decision against an officer or recommendation, because it does come with a risk. And from that point of view, you know, I would ask you to consider your position carefully. You have given us a number of reasons for refusal, so we have taken a note of that, and we can certainly take take that into account. I would mention, for the sake of record, that there was a site visit that took place on Monday, and clearly a lot of you have got very recent recollection of exactly what's involved with this site and the proposal. So purely from placing on the record, that site visit has taken place this week, and I assume a number of you are taking that into account when reaching the decision which will shortly be taken. I'm not sure if the Director of Planning wants to add anything.
I think members may be aware of the guidelines contained in the Planning Advisory Service document Probity in Planning, which we've referred to before, which does recommend that members hear a consideration of each reason for refusal that has been put forward from officers, going beyond what the legal officer has just said, bearing in mind the fact that the there is a strong recommendation for approval. I think you should bear in mind that taking the reasons for refusal that have been put forward, the first one, that it is an inappropriate use for the site. You've heard the officer's report, read the officer's report, that makes it quite clear that hotels are seen as an important part of the London economy and are encouraged to be located in the central activities zone. This is right in the heart of the central activities zone in Southwark, so it is extremely questionable to argue that it is an inappropriate site for a commercial location within the central activities zone. The argument, the reason for refusal regarding its height, apart from simply measuring over 30 metres in height, our policy does refer to being significantly taller than its surroundings. It is only slightly taller than the building that it adjoins. It's not significantly taller than adjoining buildings. So the question about how you apply our tall buildings policy should take into account the fact that the surroundings include the host building, which is a few metres lower. So I think a tall buildings policy refusal is extremely weak. The concept of saying that hotels... I'm giving you advice on the suggested reasons for refusal. As is recommended in the Planning Advisory Services document on probity and planning, that members should all be aware of and take note of. The argument, the reason for refusal that there are no allocations for hotels, I think just simply to say that the problem with this application, the harm it causes, can be identified by the fact that there are no allocations for hotels, whereas there is the strong London plan policy position and the Southwark plan policy to support hotels in the central activities zone. The question of overdevelopment of the site, we've got a large, a large area of land. It was described as a small car park, but it is a significant piece of vacant land which members have talked about as being underused, and officers have explained how it is a sensible use of an underused piece of land with an appropriate scale of development. The overshadowing has been dealt with as being an issue which has been taken into account, BRE guidelines, etc., and there are relatively minor infringements of that. And the question of the quality of accommodation, which Councillor McCallum has pointed out, the London plan policy that impacts upon this, but as officers, as we have pointed out, the Greater London Authority has issued its comments on this. It is their policy in the London plan. They did not see fit to draw that to our attention as a defect in the development. So, in conclusion, I would just like to warn members that all of those reasons for refusal that have been put forward can be described as being relatively weak, and this does open us up, as the legal officer suggested, to a strong risk of the decision being turned over.
If I may, before we continue, I want to be really fair to the contributions made thus far. I'm not going to express an opinion for or against the application. I really want us to take on board the comment made by our principal advisors. If I may, therefore, solicit initial comment based upon what we've heard so far as part of our own ongoing dialogue. Okay, Councillor Morris, first of all.
Yeah, so I just wanted to be really clear about the site allocation process in our local plan and the weight that that holds with an inspector, because it was my understanding that an inspector refers to the local plan policies and local policies when they are judging an appeal. And, you know, this is a brand new site allocation document, and I don't understand why that doesn't hold any weight.
Okay, that's a very clear and quite specific question. Which of you wish to respond to that, John?
I think that was dealt with in answers, and what the applicant said there was that this was only a partial redevelopment of this site, and that the building at the office building on Blackfriars Road would remain in situ. If it had been a total redevelopment of the site, then that argument would have had more strength. But because it was only a partial redevelopment of the car park, that was not quite as telling as it might otherwise have been.
First of all, the response provided appears to be pretty clear. A wholesale change to the that plot of land would have caused that policy to be operative. This is but a partial development, okay? And therefore we as a committee can take a view. Now, I want to be really clear. I'm just conscious of the time it's taken for us to arrive at this point. Okay? And what I'm really pleased that the members have read documents and have therefore generated many questions. And I said I've tried to accommodate prior to this meeting
a robust exchange of views, both face-to-face briefings, visit to the site, and of course by email, that you all share that dialogue with us all. So I wanted to, as far as possible, to deal with these quite significant observations. So this particular observation is only just been made, and therefore, unfortunately, I've not been prepared to tackle it. But I'm pretty clear that the advice we have been provided is that this is but a partial development, and therefore it's a car underused space. The neighbours identified it as being an underused space, and therefore ripe for some form of development, of which the applicant has chosen it will be a hotel. The hotel, as identified within rural policies, our local policies, may be relatively numb on the point, but on the London plan, it's pretty clear that there is this part of London is ripe for development, the development of new hotels. And what we have before us is an application that falls square within the mayor's view of this part of London. Now, I'll take further clarifications on that, because I don't want to move away from this point. I won't take further clarification on this point, because I'd like us to keep pursuing it until we fully understand why we received the recommendation from our most two, our senior, indeed three, or others, senior officers here, and we are seeking to either simply ignore the advice or simply amend the advice. And if we are going to amend the advice, we need good reasons and good evidence. Councillor McCutcheon, first of all.
I've got sort of two policy things and a sort of general thing, if I can,
I'll
Chair.
Address this point first of all.
Oh, so on which point? The overdominance point? Yes. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's the first time really we've ever properly considered in detail this policy in a planning committee meeting. My understanding, someone will correct me on the history if I'm wrong, but this is a saved policy from the 2011 local plan?
Seven.
Well, there is saved Southwark Plan Policy 1.12. Sorry. Saved Southwark Plan Policy 1.12, which you'd be referring to, which is the 2007 Southwark Plan. There are some similar wording in the core strategy. Core strategy 11, is it? So 2011, but I can't remember the policy number, so I'm trying to remember.
My point really, I mean, either way, my point is that this is a policy that was written in 2007 anticipating the risk of overdominance of hotel provision in any part of the borough, but obviously this is the area within the borough which is most likely to be affected by the overdominant provision of hotels. Clearly, at some point, because of the way this policy has been worded, at some point in time, we're going to hit a moment where hotel provision is overly dominating in the local area. My position, my belief is that we've hit that point in this locality, in the Bankside area. Simon's come back to talk about the kind of harm and impact on the local character of the area. I mean, I repeat the point I made at the very outset of our consideration of this application, that nowhere in Saved Policy 1.12 does it mention character of the area. It simply refers to it simply states that hotel and visitor accommodation will not be permitted where an overdominance of visitor accommodation in the area exists. So, I mean, yes, we can debate how you define overdominance, but to my mind, actually, 36 hotels with almost 3,000 hotel rooms within half a mile radius of this site, that's overdominance. And ultimately, it's our job as members of this committee to weigh the harm against the benefit of a scheme. That's exactly what I'm doing in coming to that conclusion. And it's for us to be the ones interpreting, as the elected members of this committee, the ones interpreting whether or not the extent of that harm is significant enough for us to refuse the application. I've heard the officer's advice, which mimics and reiterates the advice that we received in the report, in the briefing, on the site visit yesterday. I've heard that advice. I'm coming to the conclusion, as an elected member, that I disagree with it.
Now, I suppose
a further follow-up question to that would be...
Follow-up question to that observation is how many of those hotels are actually in Southwark? And I wonder if this... Sorry?
Still in SE1.
In Southwark. If I may. If I may finish my point, I extend the courtesy to listen to you. Yep. Okay. So, how many of those hotels are in Southwark? And within our geographic area, have we reached a point in which hotels are so dominant that we should now place limitations on their construction? Now, I suggested at the beginning of the meeting that it was a worthy question and one that we needed good evidence. And at this stage, I didn't have the evidence to support that assertion, which is why we allowed the meeting to continue to keep exploring other aspects of the application. But unless you are able to tell us that with good evidence, we have reached that saturation point and there's a clear definition that the committee members can refer to define what is the over-dominance, therefore saturation point, which would now trigger a response from this committee and indeed from the council policy development. Go ahead.
Chair, I mean, just to respond to that, I mean, I suppose, firstly, I don't consider actually the boundaries of the local authority to be the determining factor in evaluating the over-dominance in a locality. The locality is the locality. The local authority boundaries aren't directly relevant to that.
But we're in Southwark. This is the Southwark
Planning Committee.
Indeed,
and the question, the policy... requirement or question, the policy crux of the policy is whether there's an overdominance of hotel accommodation in the locality. That's a bit like saying, do we have too many schools in an area? Oh well, once you go over the county boundary, there's loads more school places available. But that's not it's not the same thing. If you're talking about how dominating a type of development is in a locality, that locality is wider or smaller. I mean, equally, you could argue that we don't have enough hotels in Southwark as a whole, so therefore we need to build more. That might be true. We don't need to build them all in Bankside.
Okay.
So I think you can quite easily confuse these things.
Forgive me, I don't want to lose this point, because it's a pretty important pillar underpinning the current unease around the application. So if I may bring in... the officer, do you wish to comment on this aspect at this point?
I was simply trying to record what the policy 1.12 says, just for clarity for members. There is a policy and there is a reason behind the policy, as stated in the plan. And the last sentence of the reason, which I think is the closest to the issue that we're debating here, is what it says is dominance by single use such as visitor accommodation detracts from the vitality of an area and reduces the range of other services available to residents and visitors. So I think the term detract from the vitality of an area is the closest we get to a reference to character. It doesn't use that word, but that's the closest that the policy gets to character. That was just clarity. Just a clarity point.
Yeah, I mean, I thank the officer. I've got the policy open in front of me as well, and I completely accept that is a line within the policy. I mean that part of the question here is really then whether it detracts from and reduces the range of other services, and I think by extension, other uses of the. Of the short the shortage of land supply in our borough, and I mean, actually having 36 hotels within a half a mile radius of a point is surely, and indeed just to bring it back to the evidence question that the chair asked for. I mean, I asked the applicant what evidence they had to suggest that there was an undersupply of hotel accommodation in the locality, and they weren't able to provide any evidence. They cited some current occupancy figures, which don't take into account the anticipated, the projected, the known increase in hotel provision in the locality, which is going to, I don't know in terms of rooms, but in terms of actual hotels, it's going to almost
add 50% onto the current numbers locally. So, I mean, in terms of the evidence we've heard here today, I strongly believe that there is an overdominance, and that actually, if we're going to go back to the reasons element, the justification of the policy, which isn't, of course, the policy itself, it's the explanation to it, then actually, it is, of course, reducing from other services which could be another provision which could be available in that area. So I thank you for the comment, but I still stand by my view, my interpretation of the policy and actually my interpretation of the evidence that we've heard, even from the applicant, let alone from the objectors and the ward councillor who've spoken tonight.
Right. If I may take Councillor Mahesh, then I'll need to return to Councillor Morris in regards to motion. We need to do something about this motion. So, first of all, Councillor Mahesh.
I just wanted to return to site allocation. I think Councillor Morris made it very clear how in the new site plan allocates that site to use that is not being given here. And I just want to kind of raise three clarifications or questions. So firstly, Yvonne said that we could, even with a partial redevelopment, we could have housing. So we could have as much, but we still could, so we could still meet the objective there. Secondly, if we were to pass this application tonight, then we certainly wouldn't be able to have housing in that space because it's not possible for them both to be there at the same time. That's number two. And I think actually number three, which I think is the most important one as a point of precedent and principle, if we're saying that a partial development of a site means that the policy around that site allocation can be flouted, then what does that mean for all future site allocations? Does it mean that any developer can choose a site, not develop all of it, and ignore the policy? I think that's a very worrying precedent to be setting.
Okay, let's return to the motion on the table. And I wonder, Councillor Morris, do you want to amend any of the conditions?
The reason
for refusals, first of all, in light of the debate we've just had?
No, I don't think so. And I think, I think the point about the site allocation has just been made that I was going to come back and make, which is that if we allow a hotel on this site, it precludes the site for a very long time, one would assume, from being used for the purpose for which we, as a council, that's a collective body of members and officers, have allocated as a site that has potential for housing. So it means that that's not going to come forward for a very, very, very long time, because by building on the car, putting a hotel in the car park, it's not, the site's now not going to come forward anytime soon. So, I think from that point of view, I think, site allocation is a site allocation. I just don't understand. You know, this is what we have expressed a desire to see on that site. We're a plan-led authority. We're not a developer-led authority. I don't understand how a developer is allowed to come in and do that. And just on the hotels, actually, there's quite a few missing on the officer's report, and I'm just going through them. So it doesn't include the H10 Waterloo. It doesn't include the Hilton Bankside. It doesn't include, I think, the Holiday Inn Express. Or we might have the Holiday Inn Express. There's actually quite a few. Hoxton Hotel in Blackfriars Road. There's a whole load of hotels in the vicinity, existing and in the pipeline. That haven't been included, so just in terms of the numbers. And also, the issue about Lambeth, hotels or something being over the border, I wondered if officers could clarify for me the duty to cooperate legislation about, working with your neighbouring authorities on various things like this, particularly on planning matters. Actually, it's just become the duty to agree, has it not? It's the duty to agree.
The duty to agree, previously duty to cooperate, mainly deals with plan preparation, the assessment of need for various locality such as housing need would be something that's taken into account in plan preparation, and a duty to cooperate or a duty to agree would be an agreement between neighbouring boroughs about whether there are common concerns, whether need in one borough can be met by provision in another borough. So that's one of the reasons why we enter into discussions about duty to cooperate or agree. However, in London context, we're very much guided when it comes to housing, which is one of the most important things. We do, of course, have the regional authority, Greater London Authority, that, that provides a lot of very clear guidance on housing targets, housing need, etc., how it's assessed between boroughs. I think the point that you are alluding to, Councillor, is not necessarily one that invokes a duty to agree, but the issue that is acknowledged, that the impacts of a development we do have to take into account if we're considering a development close to one of our neighbours, such as Lambeth. We have to consider what impacts it has on them, and we would expect neighbouring boroughs who are dealing with developments that will impact on areas of Southwark to take into account those impacts.
So the reason that I mentioned it is in the context that was raised earlier of Lambeth are currently producing their local plan or reviewing their local plan, and they have said that in the Waterloo area they believe there is already an over-concentration of hotels and that they are going to restrict future hotels. So given that Waterloo actually covers a bit of Southwark as well, That was why I was asking the question. If it's an over-domination for them, and I haven't looked actually to be fair at what the numbers are for their side of it, but clearly there's a very close boundary issue here. That area is known locally. People don't say I live in Southwark or I live in Lambeth. They say I live in Waterloo, and so I think we have to have some kind of agreement with Lambeth. What we certainly can't have is Lambeth saying, well, we're not going to have any more hotels, and Southwark then having to take a whole load more because they won't. So, and I know that's about plan making, and that is, in a sense, for a future discussion, but I think it is relevant to this particular application, given that we've got the site allocation issue, already in this.
Thank you, Councillor. Thank you. Do you
further
respond to that?
I would make one further comment about invoking the idea of over-dominance of hotels in the area. I think you've asked the question, at what stage will we reach that, bearing in mind Councillor McCallum's observation that it was clearly envisaged that it could occur, but I think in the case of Lambeth, they must have done further evidence gathering to come to a conclusion, and that evidence will be subject to scrutiny as well. I mean, we have to take into account here the fact that there are quite a large number of hotels up the road in parts of Blackfriars Road, Southwark Street, etc. But if you take the area to the east and to the south, there's the H10 Hotel, and then there's nothing to Elephant and Castle. And going off in various other directions, there are other...
Sorry, if you could allow the officer to complete the comment first.
I stand corrected if there is another one, but I mean there is a significant area to the south of this which has got nothing like the concentration of hotels that Southwark Street has or the Bankside area has. So when you say the over-dominance in the area, being vague about the area that you're talking about is not going to help.
Okay. Right then. So I think we've had a really interesting debate, and one that we most certainly need to have at another place, at another time. But the resolution on the table, what we need to tackle, and I just asked you just to, I asked you a moment ago whether or not you wish to review and amend any of the aspects of the resolution. You decided not, and the seconder is clearly not intending to. Okay, and unless I've got other reason not to go to the vote, I think we'll go to the vote. In that case, we'll go to the vote. So can I just for clarity's sake, because I think we need to be really clear what is about to happen. We've got the officer advice, which is pretty clear and restated on more than a number of occasions. Okay, so I'd like the resolution. Can we just read out the resolution again, just for purposes of clarity? And who can read it out for me, John?
Well, if I could just go through the reasons which you put forward, Councillor. So you've proposed that the application should be refused. And that's been seconded by, I think, three hands went up together. I think we'll take it as Councillor McCollum. And just to run through the, I think there were eight reasons for refusal, and you might just want to check them that I think they are. First of all, you said the hotel was not appropriate, and that was the saturation point in relation to the number of hotel rooms within the vicinity. Secondly, you said that the hotel was not designated in the emerging Southwark plan. That's not policy at the moment. Obviously, that's emerging policy, but you referred to the emerging Southwark plan.
Can I just say, sorry,
yeah, please do.
Point,
yes.
So it's not designated. It's that site is designated as for an alternative use in the emerging Southwark plan,
right.
And it's not identified at all in the Blackfriars Road SPD as a site, as a development site.
Thank you. Next, you said that it breaches recommended heights, there was a discussion, and Michael made the point that the Blackfriars SPD is actually policy, it's actually guidance, and the policy is actually the core strategy, and that has a slightly different interpretation about heights. So I take the point that there is some mileage on that one.
Well, it is a tall
exactly.
Building. It is in our definition. And
yes.
Yes, I refer to the existing rather than the emerging policy in terms of the tall location of tall buildings.
You then said there was no reference to the site as suitable as a hotel.
Yeah.
Isn't that to some extent
the same
as two?
Yes,
so
yes,
so
yeah, yeah.
I had it down as a separate one. So let's take that one out. You then had the overdevelopment of the space, and this is the policy 1.12. point that you raised, Councillor McCollum.
No, sorry. Policy 1.12 is about overdominance of hotel provision in the locality. I think the overdevelopment of the site is something different.
Yes.
Right. So policy 1.12 is the first one.
Effectively, it's the first one. It's just the Councillor McCollum mentioned that policy, and I wanted to ensure that.
I think
you referred to the core strategy, hadn't you? And I wanted to just make the point that there's also the SAVE policy, which specifically talks about overdominance. To ensure that was captured.
Right, so it's the overdevelopment of the space of the site that you're raising
yeah,
here.
The impact on the amenity of neighbouring residents and school.
You then had the overshadowing of the school playground.
Yeah.
Although the advice there was that there were only minor infringements, but we're still going for that one.
They're linked, I'd say, those two.
Yeah,
that's one.
Okay.
Okay.
And John, any loss of light would have an impact on the learning environment. So to substantiate that. So I hear what Simon said. It was just marginable and possibly negligible.
Yeah.
But I would say any loss of light would have an impact on those young people in that learning environment. Thank you.
Okay.
On the quality of learning.
So that includes daylight sunlight issues, that point as
yes.
well. So that leads, we'll
us onto the fifth, which was your planning policy 4.5C, and the quality.
CB,
yeah, thank you. The quality of the accommodation and the lack of windows, that point there. So I think that's five. So that's the motion that's on the table. Chair, if you'd now like to move the vote.
Thank you. So it's been formally seconded. I'll now move to the vote. To the vote for those who support the motion to refuse this application.
Seven, Chair.
Thank you. Those who are voting, who do not support the motion.
Or you might abstain.
I have abstained.
So, can I just yes. For members' information?
Of course.
This decision would have to be referred to the GLA as an approval would have been. So it isn't a decision that we issue, it's a decision that we then refer to the GLA, just so that everybody's clear.
Yeah. Okay.
They can call it in. They can call the application in.
Frederick, put it in. I would thank everyone for this evening. I'm sorry it's somewhat longer, but it's been an extremely thorough and robust series of exchanges. Thank you and good night.